the things I see. The path that I have chosen now has led me to a wall. And with each passing day, I feel a little more like something dear was lost. It rises now before me, the dark and silent barrier. Pass beyond is what I seek. I fear that I may be too weak, and those of you who've seen it too, to glimpse the other side. The promised land is waiting, like a maiden that is soon to be a bride. The moment is a masterpiece, the weight of indecision's in the air. Standing there,
good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, March 1st, 2021. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. Or if anyone would like, they can email us a question. You can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up on our scripture reading. We left off last week We read Matthew chapter 27, so this week we'll be picking up on chapter 28, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 28. In the end of the Sabbath, as it began to dawn toward the first day of the week, came Mary Magdalene and the other Mary to see the sepulchre. And behold, there was a great earthquake, for the angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled back the stone from the door and sat upon it. His countenance was like lightning, and his raiment white as snow, and for fear of him the keepers did shake and became as dead men. And the angel answered and said unto the women, Fear not ye, for I know that ye seek Jesus, which was crucified. He is not here, for he is risen, as he said. Come, see the place where the Lord lay, and go quickly and tell his disciples that he is risen from the dead. And behold, he goeth before you into Galilee. There shall ye see him. Lo, I have told you. And they departed quickly from the sepulchre with fear and great joy, and did run to bring his disciples word. And as they went to tell his disciples, behold, Jesus met them, saying, All hail. And they came and held him by the feet and worshipped him. Then said Jesus unto them, Be not afraid. Go tell my brethren that they go into Galilee, and there shall they see me. Now when they were going, behold, some of the watch came into the city and showed unto the chief priests all the things that were done. And when they were assembled with the elders and had taken counsel, they gave large money unto the soldiers, saying, Say ye, his disciples came by night and stole him away while we slept. And if this come to the governor's ears, we will persuade him and secure you. So they took the money and did as they were taught. And this saying is commonly reported among the Jews until this day. Then the 11 disciples went away into Galilee, into a mountain where Jesus had appointed them. And when they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted. And Jesus came and spake unto them, saying, All power is given unto me in heaven and in earth. Go ye therefore, and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you alway, even unto the end of the world. Amen.
Okay, tonight we're going to go right into taking the questions and then an open forum. Jan, by the way, do you have the questions and do you have a good connection this week?
Yes, I have a bunch.
Okay. Well, you sound much clearer than you did last week, so are you back on your regular computer?
Yep.
Right.
My desktop.
Let's start with that. We'll take questions, and then we'll see if Brent's here, and then we'll go into open forum. Terry, have you been keeping an eye out for Brent?
Yes, sir, I have. I'll be watching him. He usually comes in about an hour later.
And Gerard, too. I don't see him here yet. He may be on another page, but I'm not seeing him at the moment. All right, go ahead, Jan. We'll take questions.
Okay, I'm just pulling them up right now. Give me a second. Okay. Where to start? As you know, a jurisdiction can be called into question at any time, even after a judgment, right? So how can a person best challenge jurisdiction after a judgment? House was sold. File a jurisdictional challenge directly on the case number or file a new case in that court?
Well, no. Once the jurisdiction is challenged, challenge must be proven. And if you discover that you were in a court that is not a court of record, that is not a common law procedural court, it's as if it never really was, although fiction controls reality at this point still, and until that ends, which hopefully is soon, you're not going to be able to get much done with it. But you can do the appeal. You can try a late appeal, because they only allow appeals 30 days, and I think it's 30 days if it's federal anyway. So you have only so much time to file for an appeal, but they're not going to recognize it if it's over 30 days. Probably not. I don't know of any court that's really going to give you justice on that. But we do have, for instance, a lot of cases that are joined to our case, a lot of foreclosures and some habeas corpuses and various other cases that are attached to our case. And we're using that as evidence, of course, but we also are going to pursue justice for all those cases because they all have to be revisited. And because they were in jurisdictions unknown, everything that was done was unlawful. And things need to be returned. People need to be restored back to their original state. And of course, if the house was taken, the house needs to be returned. That could be impossible in some cases, but then they'd at least have to give you the value and your losses. And you can also pursue pain and suffering. So we're going to, at some point in time, we're going to push for all that, for all the cases that are attached to our case here against the judiciary, the federal judiciary, that is. And I do believe that at some point justice will prevail. But until we get to that point, it's rare that you get justice in the courts. So I'm not too sure that there's much you can do. And that's about all I got on that. Jan? Jan, you got to unmute if you're talking. Jan, you still with us? I don't know if we lost Jan. Terry, are you hearing me? Am I coming through?
Yes, I can hear you just fine.
Right, I wonder where Jan's at. He looks muted here. Let me try unmuting him on this end.
Okay.
Jan, are you there? I just unmuted if you were muted.
Yep. I hit unmute, then it dropped the panel on me, so something weird's going on.
Okay,
anyway,
well,
next question.
I unmuted you. You got it.
We have asked a couple of attorneys for their subscribed oath of office. Two have not done so, one of which was defended by the judge saying that the Utah Supreme Court requires bar license. And so I rule that he is a lawful attorney in my court. Question, how does a person require oaths of office on the record of the court and, more importantly, kill the case when they refuse to provide that lawful requirement? Any memorandums available, please?
All right, well, that's a good question. You know, again, they're going to ignore that. I've many, many cases I've been in, I demanded oaths of office, and they never ever comply. Judges, lawyers, none of them. They don't comply. And they just ignore it and they move on. I don't know if Brent is here. You know, he may have an answer for that one. Again, I don't see real justice coming until we get to the other side. And the other side is, of course, when the deep state is on its way out or out and the courts become, we get rid of all these, goodness, these judges that just are, subverters. And once we get rid of all these unjust judges and start to replace them with real judges and then get the law applied, because remember, judges are not to rule in a case in law. If there's a criminal act, if it's a criminal charge, absolutely has to be a court of law, which is a jury and not a judge. I just finished reading through for a second time the federal rules of procedure and the things and the powers and the authority that they've given themselves in those things is just unbelievable. They control the entire court case and, they interpret the law and so on and so forth. Of course, they make that up. That's what they say. That's not the way a court of law is to run. Now, in cases where a mortgage or you lose your home or anything over $20, you demand a court of record. And again, judges can't make a decision in that. That's a case that has to go before the people and the people decide. and they're to decide if there's any laws to be applied in that particular case, as far as legislative laws, which is rare, but generally speaking, there are some cases. And again, you can apply legislative law against the individuals that are, you know, within government, against the judge and any other person who's working in government or performing some commercial activities. You can apply the regulations and the restrictions against them and hold them to the letter of the legislative law. But it cannot be held, legislative law cannot be held against the people. That's unlawful, that's not part of common law. We've never given them, nor can common law ever give them, the authority or the ability to legislate and judge our behavior. That belongs to, as far as judging our behavior, that belongs to us, ourselves. And of course, if you injure someone, then it belongs to the people to judge and not anyone that is employed by the government. I guess that's all I got on that.
Okay. Question. A request for jurisdiction / proof of would blot out the question. Correct me if I'm wrong. Watch Attorneys 6-Bar Treaty. Any, let's say, website. Are you familiar with? It doesn't give a name for the website, even.
I didn't get a question in there, did you?
Well, what was the question? I know that a request for jurisdiction / proof of jurisdiction.
Oh, proof of jurisdiction. Well, proof of jurisdiction is supposed to be on the paperwork. If it's an administrative court, it's supposed to state so. And if you challenge jurisdiction, then they have to prove and by showing the jurisdiction they have and bring that forward. Again, another thing that they ignore. These people are just totally lawless. They don't even obey their own laws, their own legislated laws, nor their own rules. They'll apply their rules when it works for them, and they'll not apply them when they don't work for them. It is so severely defunct and unjust. You know, we could see what they've done to the election here, and they're just totally ignoring everything. And even the United States Supreme Court, and again, we put them on notice, their actions are being watched, and at the end of the day, we are going to consider indictments against the United States Supreme Court justices. Now, we know there are three of them. That I know Gorsuch was one of them. What was it? Thomas was another one. Alito. Those three, they were willing to hear the cases, but the rest of them were not. Now, I think I heard something about Amy. She had mentioned, and I heard nothing about Kavanaugh, though, but I heard something about Amy making the statement that in a particular case, because of how late she came in or something, she was unable to make any kind of a consideration or a decision on hearing those cases. Have you heard anything on that, Jan, or anyone else, on what
No.
Amy's position was and why she didn't vote with the with Thomas and the others? No, Em?
No, I haven't heard anything.
All right, and that I'm not even too clear on. So, but anyway, look at the United States Supreme Court in front of all the people, the entire nation, is again just showing their colors by refusing to open the courts of justice. They just refuse to open them up. They've sealed them up, their courts of injustice. And we need to get rid of them, all of them. Again, you know, with the exception of those three. And again, we have to find out the story on Kavanaugh and Amy on why, you know, they didn't stand with Thomas and the others. All right, next question.
What is the update for the common law action of which I am a joinder for the abuse of power issues? Have we a decision? Please update.
There'll never be a decision until we get to the other side. Every decision is a negative decision, a denial of justice, a denial of a court of record, a denial of hearing anything. They just deny everything, and they operate under a fiction of law and self-serving. So, again, it's it's very rare that you'll see justice. I mean, we've had a couple of cases here or there where, you know, things went okay and they did the right thing And most of that, even that, was just ignoring it, and they just, you know, dropped the cases, that kind of thing, and without statements or anything concerning anything that we've said or done. Again, we're not going to see justice till we get to the other side. And I'll repeat it. To get to the other side means the deep state is going down or is totally out already, and justice returns to our courts. And that's where we, the people, have to be organized and ready in position to press that forward and to explain to people, because many people do not even understand what a court of justice really is in the common law. They will continue to try to use the rules of the court under the Rules Enabling Act of 1934, but that's unlawful, because up until 1934, they operated under the rules of the common law, and we are a common law nation, and even equity courts are to run under the rules of the common law, and equity courts are to run under maxims as well as courts of record, which would be called courts of law. So again, there are two courts. One is the court of law and one is the court of equity. And the people fall under the court of law. Now, people can choose an equity court if it's a contract dispute and they figure, well, oh, we can get through the case a lot quicker if it's a simple case, and we'll go to a judge. As long as the judges are just. Right now they're not just. I would never go into an equity court. But when we return back to justice, then you can... consider some cases and take them into equity and let a judge decide. But you have to have the faith that they're going to follow the law. And again, onto the other side, they'll be forced to follow the law. There'll be penalties. All right, next.
The court has blocked common law out. How can you get in there to sue them devils?
Same answer. Nothing until after we get to the other side. We've filed so many cases, it's depressing. But again, all these cases have a reason and a purpose, and they'll have some clout and power on the other side, because this is the proof. This proves conspiracy, because they all act the same way. It doesn't matter whether they've done a foreclosure in Texas or California or Ohio, Jersey, Connecticut, New York. It doesn't matter where they've done it. They all do the same thing. All these non-judicial foreclosures. Same thing with habeas corpuses. All the federal judges, they all do the same thing. The judges constantly throw us out under Rule 12, refuse to hear. Again, all these are unlawful and unjust and subversion. It's assault against the sovereign. We're the sovereign.
I lost you, John, or is it just me?
This hell to pay up eventually. But again, you got the controls, and until we take the controls back, and I hope the people realize and understand this, we have to take these controls from them and keep them and get involved with making sure that we have government by consent and be in the consentors, because we're here because the people forgot. Yeah, they didn't teach us, and they removed this education from our schools and so on. But nevertheless, it's still to a large degree our fault. From just being lazy and figuring, let's just enjoy life. Someone else will worry about these other things, to the point where they don't even know how to get power back. They don't know where the power is at. And there are two power structures. One is political, one is judicial. And we, the people, must take it back. And the only way we're going to do this is only one way. There is absolutely no other way. I challenge anyone to tell me another way. But there's no other way other than to start committees of safety, as we're trying to do in all of our counties, start taking back the controls from the ground up, rebuilding the militias, both organized and unorganized, taking control, connecting with our sheriff, taking control of our government on the local end, get the committeemen involved get people to join in, become the committeemen, to take hold of the political process, work within the committees of safety to educate the people within our counties, within our towns, within our election districts, working together, committeemen, committees of safety, militia, and then also the administrations for the juries, to make sure we have free and independent juries. This is the business of the people, and we don't get paid for that. Our payment is control of government, government by consent. That's our payment. And our payment is a government that respects and honors and obeys the Constitution. And unless we do those things, nobody should not be participating with this. All of us should be participating. Don't let the other guy do it. You know, some people could do more than others. And maybe you'll just come to a meeting once a month in the county, locally. And maybe to some degree that's sufficient for now. But at some point you've got to do a little more. And under emergencies, we've got to pull together and do what we have to do together as a people in our own communities, and so on. But again, there's just one way. And if people are too lazy to do it, or they just push it off to the other guy, well, then we just can't have government by consent. And we just live under communism or whatever's heading our way. Well, it is Marxism and communism. The end results are all the same thing. You know, all of it ends is really, I think, ends up as communism, no matter how you get it. There are many ways, many roads to communism. We definitely are on that road. And I am absolutely convinced within the next 2 or 3 years, and maybe even less, there's many, many things. We won't see liberty no more. Of course, there are other forces pushing another direction, and many of us are aware of that. And we're waiting and we're seeing for military intervention, because there is absolutely no way to save this nation other than military intervention. I didn't clearly see that 6 months ago, and I didn't see that necessarily, well, let's say 6 months ago. But at some point in time, it came to realize, and even more now today than ever, it is clear to me there's no way the deep state could have been taken out. The interference with foreign nations into our not only our election system, but all of our local governments. Okay, all of them have been subverted. You know, all of the many of the legislators and many of our state governments, and many of the senators in our state governments, and then of course also the federal. So it's huge. The tentacles run deep and far. And they have a tight, cold, a fist, closed fist on this whole system. And we can't get it open. There's only two ways, the military or the people take up arms. And I'm, you know, with the technology that they got, I don't know how far we can get with that. So we're really kind of depending and waiting on the military to make that move. So I guess that's about it. Next.
Any update on the United States common law grand jury hearing for the Supreme Court justices per the January 2nd, 2021 filing under case 116-CV-1490? Did you say on the 8th of February, 2021, show that you were going to talk about that in 2 weeks?
Well, I don't remember whether I said that or not, but we do know that we filed it on the 2nd. They probably got it the 4th, 5th, whatever. And, probably the 8th of February was, roughly speaking, probably the point in time where they forfeited their answer. They defaulted. They did not respond. But we have no power because we don't have the controls. We can't do anything. We can only continue to build the evidence, continue. And, you know, I might write another paper, especially in light of, some of the decisions that have been made lately in the Supreme Courts. But again, there's no justice in that court or any court anywhere in the United States, for that matter. At least I'm not aware of any court that has justice anywhere in the United States, from the village level all the way up to the federal level. And we're not going to have any justice in those courts until we get to the other side. It always gets back to that same thing. We're not going to get justice until we get to the other side. And getting to the other side also requires we, the people, to do our job, because we have to have enough of a presence throughout the entire nation in many, many counties working together to bring forth this justice that we desire and need, to take control of the political process through the committee men. It's going to be a battle, too. And remember, we'll be battling at that time, and the other side will be battling ignorance. We won't be battling the enemy, but we'll be battling ignorance, because people have been taught so wrong how the processes of the courts work. just about, lawyers, estate lawyers, bar attorneys particularly, but lawyers, generally speaking, they've been taught certain things as truth, which are all lies. To unravel that whole thing is going to take time. But I will tell you one thing. There are two things that are on our side, and the two things is our history, as far as our heritage is concerned, who we are as a people, how we were created, the founding documents, and many, 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 many United States Supreme Court decisions that made things clear, at least when they were reasonably just, and also even law itself, legislative law. And maxims, all those things will be on our side. So if we get a court of justice, it doesn't matter. We will get rid of ignorance by defending it with truth, defending our courts with truth, and really blotting out ignorance through, through the truth. It's that simple. So laying out a case, maxims are on our side, law is on our side. Anything legislative that is not repugnant to the Constitution, that is on our side. Supreme Court rulings that are not Republican, mostly the older ones, are on our side. Common law and the history of common law is on our side. Our founding fathers, as far as many of their statements and letters, the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers, all on our side. And that's what we've been doing, writing papers to create all those positions. We've established many, many, many positions, all the important positions. We're working on handbooks right now, and since we get handbooks back, we'll take a look to see if there's any other positions we have to make a case for. But all these positions are really, we've already made a case for. It's only a matter of getting them into a court of justice to be heard. And for the people, not judges. Judges don't get to decide these things. The people get to decide this. It's called the King's Bench, 12 jurors. All right, next question.
I went to the National Liberty Alliance website. I'm looking for an example of how we the people can express with various elected officials to remove orders and rules that they have passed. Is there a specific format? Does it involve filing with the sheriff's office, for example, for courts, schools, public buildings, and so forth?
Read the first part of that question.
Okay, he went to the National Liberty Alliance website. He's looking for an example of how we the people can express with various elected officials to remove orders and rules that they have passed, like the
mask. We're working with GR and a group of people that he's gathered together with what's called the Republic Review, which is... we're pushing the states, trying to work with legislators within the states to work together to reconsider all legislation on a federal level. And they should also do this on the state level, too, because the states are even worse, to be honest with you. But the key thing is establishing the difference between law and civil law. They unlawfully, in 1938, moved us into civil law and established civil law, and they've abrogated common law. They claim to have combined law and equity together in one form called civil law. And so we're under civil law. So civil law is Babylonian law. They're one and the same. They're interchangeable. Civil law is the law of the city. It's how to control the people. Not the people controlling the government, but the government controlling the people. That's what civil law is all about. And our founding fathers knew we couldn't have civil law. It's not part, you won't find that in any of our founding documents. You'll only find, that we're a common law nation. We're under our document, the founding document particularly, the Declaration of Independence establishes us as a common law nation, as that we've called upon God. It's a covenant with God to be under his law, and receive the blessings of his liberties. And that's where our liberties come from. That's where our law comes from. And that's all written in the hearts of men. That's why 12 jurors can pretty much figure any problem out when they work on it, hear the facts, and judge it in their own hearts. And the fact that you got 12 of them, will balance out the ignorance and balance out anything that is in error in any of those individuals to come together as one final conclusion in the matter, whatever that might be, and what the restitution should be. So, again, we always get back to the same thing until we get these courts back open. I think I answered the question.
Last question that I had, John, so time to move on.
That was it?
Yep.
Oh, okay, that's good. Reread the first part of that question one more time. For some reason, I feel I was missing something. He went to the website and didn't... Is that the one we were just looking at, right?
Yeah, he wanted to know if there was a format or something that could be used to send out, and would it go to the sheriffs, or where would you send it?
Yeah, there's nothing you could do there. The sheriffs can't fix this problem. The states have to fix this problem. And we can force this. There's many different ways we can force a lot of these things once we get the courts of justice, because we can get court rulings to clean up a lot of stuff. But the states really have to get involved. Look, the mess is so bad. I'm hearing anywheres from, goodness, what was the loan number? I think it was like 50 or 60%. 60 to 80% of the legislators in both houses in the federal level are going to be removed. And they have to be removed because they're enemies of the people. They're enemies of the Constitution. They're enemies of America. They're enemies of the Republic. And so they will be removed eventually. They have to be. And when that happens and house is cleaned and justice is applied and the law is being applied, that's when we can start doing the repairs, and that's when we can start to get justice. Until that happens, we can't have it in the courts. We can only be building the case. And again, that's what we've been doing, developing a case and proving conspiracy, because they all act the same way from one state to another. It doesn't matter. You're not going to get a judge to go against the status quo, unfortunately. Sheriff can protect the people before they get into the court by preventing things from happening and preventing arrest and certain things, maybe by local police departments, refusing to receive the individual delivered to them for a jail, because the sheriff, is in charge of the county jail. And so when anyone is arrested by the city police, state police, or whatever, they take them into their whatever court jurisdiction they think that they're operating in. Then, of course, they deliver them to the jailer. And when the jailer, who is the sheriff, ultimately, they could look at the case and say, this was not a court of justice. And they can release the person immediately right there and then. They don't even have to bother with anything else. So that kind of a thing can be corrected by bold and backboned sheriffs. But a sheriff doing that on their own would be pretty dangerous for them and tough. And that's why they need to organize, too. And they are organizing. I'm seeing that come from many different directions, and we're working to do that also. So once the sheriffs organize, if you get, like in my state, for instance, the sheriffs got together on the SAFE Act here in New York, trying to deal with more, taking more of our liberties away with our weapons and so on, and ammunition and so on. But the sheriffs got together, and they also wanted to take control of the permits. But the sheriffs here in New York got together, and out of 62 sheriffs, I believe it was 59 or 60 sheriffs, showed up and agreed. And they worked together, and they told the governor to take a hike. They ignored the orders, and they let it be known that they're not going to enforce it. And they also let us know, we went down to see our sheriff, and let us know that, if these things were applied against us, they're trying to take our weapons or whatever, that he would send his deputies out to protect us. So, it is moving, and this is in New York, So, unfortunately, we have 7 counties that don't have sheriffs, okay? They're not elected. So they didn't, I'm not sure whether they, well, I guess they didn't participate at all. So probably is less than the number I gave. I know my sheriff said only two sheriffs, and I presume he means two elected sheriffs, didn't come to agreement. They were really on the enemy side. But generally speaking, the sheriffs can do a lot, but they got to come together, and they got to back each other up. And, you know, you get three or four or five sheriffs in counties close by, they can come together and be pretty darn powerful. You get most of them or all of them within a state, and, you know, that's it, the game over for that kind of a thing. But it takes an education, you know. Power is knowledge. Knowledge is power. And until these sheriffs come to the knowledge and understanding of what they should and shouldn't be doing, because they don't even know, they don't really have enough to power. They got to learn. All right, so that's it.
John,
for the questions? Yeah.
Terry has a question she'd like to ask.
Okay, go ahead, Terry.
Okay, I was talking to somebody before the meeting started, and she sent a question in, and so I'm going to ask for her. She wants to know if NLA supports the effort. She found it by on a webpage of Ann Vandersteel, who's been around. And basically, it's she's asking, are you going to support this effort? And I would like to read the two paragraphs. They're fairly short. And then he has 362 pages, a PDF of 38.7 megabytes of evidence. So, that be all right?
Yeah, okay.
Okay. You can simply walk into a town council, school board, or other official government meeting, hand them a thumb drive with the below PDF attached, and read the following declaration. Pursuant to 18 U.S.C. 4 and 18 U.S.C. 2382, we are hereby serving you legal notice of felonies that have been committed that you are required to acknowledge. If you fail or refuse to, your act of omission will be construed as aiding and abetting these crimes and aiding and abetting these crimes, and you will be considered a party in these crimes and stripped of your authority or office. And this material will be sent to the federal court for prosecution. Again, you have been given legal notice. We will expect a notice and a report by you describing your response within a week. Failure to do this will result in a criminal and civil legal action against you in your personal and corporate capacities. Have a nice day, and in your name.
Well, what is the synopsis? Do we have a synopsis of these crimes?
Well, it's election fraud evidence, and 2382 is misprison.
Okay. Well, look at you know, right now we know that there are forces working on this. We're establishing the fact that the courts are not going to step up on this. And that's going to have to be dealt with at some point. But we're establishing the fact that we've proven and shown. I don't know that anyone is really that the whole thing was a setup and a fraud on the voting. That they literally stole the election. Even those who are arguing the other side, they know the truth. It doesn't matter. It's so obvious. You have to be blind.
Can I add something, John?
Yeah.
By supporting this effort, we might get, you know, thousands of people across the U.S.
Well, I'd have to.
And that would be the people doing this.
Yeah, I'd have to look at it. I don't know that I'd go to town halls or any places to do that in that way. I think we should do it in a different way. But we have to get enough people behind us. You can't get a small group of people in this here over this area. You know, when we started what we were doing, we realized pretty quickly that we're not going to accomplish our goals by just a small group of people here in New York, whether it's just a few counties or even the whole state. We have to get the whole United States. And that's why we worked diligently for many years, probably 10 or 12 years, whatever it's been, more than that maybe, because we were doing other things prior to that organizing. But, you know, we were organizing in order to get a presence in every state, and we did. We have a presence in every state.
Well, John, what I'm thinking of is what if everybody had a, you know, everybody's listeners, and we get lots of people to do the same thing, and they turn it in. Isn't the oath of their office to protect the rights of the people, and here our rights have been denied because of election fraud, And what if we got a whole bunch of people saying the same thing like that all across the country?
Well, already there are plenty of people, and we could gather a lot of them and pull them together. But again, we need people organizing in every state. We that's what we need. And we need to build those committees of safety. And it's out of the committees of safety that these ideas and other ideas can spring forward and we can exercise them. You know, that's one of the reasons for, and this is one thing I didn't pick up early enough, and that is the Committee of Correspondence. There is one individual who is part of the Committee of Correspondence, a chairperson for the Committee of Correspondence with the Committee of Safety. And that person is to make communications with all other committees, chairman or committee from the committees of correspondence in other counties, and then ultimately, you know, we're going to work that connection up here on the national level as far as trying to tie everyone together so there's a communications going on, and an idea like this could flow through it, and then, you know, these people that are on the chair as the committees of correspondence, they can take that information back to their committees of safety and get that, you know, seeing how they feel about it and get things going. So we'll all be doing a lot of the same things. This is the purpose of what we're doing here as National Liberty Alliance, to bring forward a platform to be able to spring forward for, particularly through the committees of safety in every county, but also, you know, to communicate, to bring communication, organization, and education to all of the people. We came into, you know, we found or connected with, you know, this GR and those people with the Republic Review, and we've adopted that into part of the Committee of Safety. So that will play a good role with exactly what you're talking about here.
Hey, John?
Yeah, let me just finish. Hang on.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you get me a copy of that paper so I can look at all of these things that you're talking, you know, that they're talking about. But I would also word, you know, I wouldn't end it, we'll have a nice day. You know, it's like a, sort of a little dig maybe we shouldn't do. We have to be much more polite, and it doesn't matter how evil they are, return good for evil. You know, they give you evil, you return good. So anyway, if we put it together, we'll take a look at that, think about it, and we can incorporate, sounds like a good idea, we can incorporate that into the committees of safety. Gerard, go ahead.
I don't know where you got that, Terry. I'm having a lot of trouble with my computer. I can't get the wall up, and I'm just on with the app. I heard it. It sounds familiar. Robert David Steele has a very similar document that you can go online and download and either put it on a thumb drive or you can print it. And he's got a federal case running, and anybody can take this into their counties, put their county boards, and even their town boards. This is to be done on a local level. He's got the, you don't have to do anything except for serve them and keep track of the paperwork and send it in to him. He's got the case file already. People are going to attach to it just like we do with our amicuses and stuff, and this is going nationwide. I think we should join that instead of having a bunch of little movements. I think it's, and that's exactly what you were saying, reminds me exactly what I heard. I didn't hear the whole thing because my computer keeps going out. But I'll get you those documents, John, and I'll send you the video where he talks about it.
Yeah, let's get together and think about how we can, what we can do with this and how we can do it, you know?
Yeah, the whole point.
He's got the whole case in there. It's like 30 pages.
Okay, yeah, I'm dying to see it.
265.
What's that?
This one is 265 in evidence. And, you know, what he's talking about, it's actually Vander Steele is suggesting this, is serve it everywhere. And
right.
If you have enough people across the United States and they're all coming in saying, you should be going up. If you're not, you are should be on the accusation, not just turning it down.
Well, they become party to the crime. And they got to answer that. That's a legal document. And it's going into the federal court. And they have to answer it. And if they don't answer it, it's just like them congressmen and senators that certified a vote that they knew was no good. They became party to the crime.
Now, who would you serve this on, do you think, in serving this on?
You serve it on to your county boards. You serve it on to your town boards.
Because
if they pass...
We're looking,
look at,
we're
if
looking
they,
at every town level then.
Every town, yeah. Everybody. Anybody that passed an edict, if they passed a mass edict, that's all unconstitutional crap. So if they touched it and they helped enforce it, just I'm telling you, there's going to be massive lawsuits with this whole COVID thing and everything that went on with the election. It's all going to be rolled into one ball of wax, basically.
Now,
and it's a violation.
Where did this paperwork come from?
Robert David Steele, attorneys or something that wrote it. It sounded very professional to me.
Well, we need to get on to Robert David Steele's program because I think we can get a lot of exposure there. And he was willing to listen to us and take us on, but then there were certain problems came up. And who was connecting that? Was that you, Jan, working on that connection with Steele to get us onto his program?
Jimmy Swimmer, John. And I emailed him again here last week, and I've gotten no response from him, so I guess they've decided they don't want to talk to him.
Well, who made the original contact with him?
It might have been Rosalind. I'm not sure.
Let's try to find that out, and maybe they can get a connection back up. It's very important. Look, he's had a couple of people that have given him some bad information that he's accepted. You know, he's had, what's her name? Anna Von Rich was on his program already, and a lot of bad stuff on that. He started to kind of like get a little queasy, I think, on that particular interview because some of the things she had said. And then there was something else recently I was listening to, and he was being really led with a lot of bad information concerning the law, particularly on the federal level. And I forget exactly what it was. But I really would love to get on his program because he's got a large... listening, and he's connected to a lot of other people that we can get onto their programs if we get onto his program.
Hey John.
Good exposure.
Bryn is here, but I'd like to take 30 more seconds and just give you a vision, okay?
Okay.
Okay. The Bryn says he'll come on whenever you want him. I can imagine this is something that if you got a thumb drive, everybody's got a thumb drive. You put this on it, you write that legal notice, you attach the two together, and they just drop it off at their board. And all
but,
of a
but
sudden...
You see, but there has to be a follow-up. There has to be a push.
Well, you put your name on it, and it looks a lot like an affidavit.
We have to have people that are going to get involved to work this out, to do it. And we need to work a plan, and they're going
this
to have to be involved.
This is something that is easy to do, and you can everybody can choose or not choose to do it. I'm done. Thank you.
Serve them with this paperwork, you serve them. You're the server. You have to go in and serve them. And then you send the paperwork to him and his attorneys.
A plan.
If they don't answer.
That's what I'm missing. I thought we had to create that.
No. It's all there. You don't have to do anything
drop
but
it
serve
off.
It. That's right.
Okay, well, that's fine. Because you got to do a default also, and I presume then the attorneys would do a default, and I presume they would file it in the courts. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know the plan. I was going to create one, but now I see there's a plan, so.
Right.
We should get involved in someone else's. This is a good idea.
We should endorse him. We should push it because it sounds like it's good. And he's pushing to work on the town and county levels. He understands that it has to be local, this next push that we're going to be
doing. The idea without a plan and someone orchestrating it, there has to be an orchestrator. And now I see there is already an orchestrator. I thought we were going to have to become the orchestrator.
No,
that's fine.
That's why I thought it was a good idea because we got enough to do. And if he's already done the heavy lifting, why not?
Right. Same thing with the Republic Review, you know.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Do you think the court will respond if we got those lawyers, if those lawyers are ready to go, that it would go to federal court and would be?
No, he's got the case there already.
Okay.
Well, we need to connect with Steele because we need to be interviewed so he knows who we are. Then we can then connect with him. And we can let them know that once they put this whole thing together, if they're looking for indictments, they can come to us. They can produce the case to us, and we'll consider the indictment.
I didn't get to listen to his whole spiel, but from what I gathered, they have a case up there just like we do. They have a number, and it's open, and you can keep stacking stuff in on it. And that's his plan, to stack all this stuff in on the case, because you can open up a federal case and let it sit there and keep dropping papers into it.
So he did a program on this. He's
Yeah, he did a video, and unfortunately, I hope I can find it. I got so much stuff going on, and I said, man, I got to get back to this. I'll find it. I know. As a matter of fact, I think
Terry,
Ollie
have you
might
heard the tape?
Am I what?
Have you heard the audio on Steel on this program?
No, I have not. This is this came from Ann Vandersteel.
Okay,
and
well, Ann may have heard the audio, and maybe
I put the link in your box, in Skype, and in Gerard's, and I'll put it in Jan's shortly.
And you know what? I don't know that Robert David Steele is doing the legal stuff, but he's pushing it. It might
let's discover what the plan is, who's orchestrating, and how we can participate, and how we can let others know about what we're doing and get them participating. So, all right.
Okay.
So I'll leave it up to you to get me that info, you and Terry, and we'll see. And then we should get together to talk about it. And also, Jan, let's follow back up to see who it was that made the connection with Steele for us. And then let's push that connection back open again. Let's get going on that. That's a very important interview for us. And right now is the time for us to get in, because people are looking for something to do, and we need right now to be building committees of safety. And if people understood what they were doing, and because they want to get involved, at least those people who want to get involved, we need to make that connection with them so we can empower them at the grassroots level.
And Brent is here.
Okay. All right, Gerard, are you ready to take the controls here? Everything went quiet. Did I get disconnected here?
I said no. I can't. I have no web control.
Oh.
I've been trying. I can't for some reason.
I can run the board for you if you want, Gerard.
Yeah, but I can't even see it. I don't know who's in there.
Oh,
okay, well, let's go forward and see. What are you trying to work the problem out? Do you have no web controls? What's going on?
I have the app which I'm working off of now, but I can't bring the web control page up.
I can work that. You want to let Brent go, and then I'll work.
Well, yeah. Hang on. Are you in as a are you coming in as a host?
Same way I do every week, John.
Okay. All right, so
something's changed.
I think we can work that out, and
let
Brent come in, and then I'll pass things over to you. And if you can't control it, and if you want Terry to control it, and then you can respond, and so on. And I'll be here too. So, but we'll see where we go. Let's move over to Brent first,
okay,
and give him some time on the mic, and then we'll take questions.
Okay.
Anybody that wants to get into the Q&A, *6 and *1 to get into the queue. If you have any questions or a comment, *6 and *1. Brent, now Brent is in as a host, or is he has to be unmuted?
I think I'm good, John.
You're good. We hear you.
Yeah.
Okay, this is Brent Allen Winters. He's going to take the mic. He's commonlawyer.com is his website. He's the author of The Excellence of the Common Law and many other books and handbooks. So, you got the mic. Go right ahead, Brent.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Gerard. Again, this is Brent. Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. My comments are my own. Nobody else's, just mine. I wanted to clean up a bit of a omission last week. I talked about this disabled veteran that called me, and he had been arrested because a sodomite, who he later found out was an Antifa member, and followed him out of a grocery store screaming at him because he didn't have on a mask, and he dogged him all the way to his car, and the fellow that called me didn't respond. When he got to the car and he tried to unlock the door to put his groceries in the back seat, this fellow got real close to him, sidled up to him, and began to kick him with his feet where the cameras couldn't see him. And he wouldn't back off. And so this fellow that called me was in the car, leaned into the car, and he grabbed the ice scraper and brought it out and commenced a wailing on this fellow. He went down to the ground pretty quick, and this fellow then picked up his cell phone and threw it against the pavement with all of his force and busted it to smithereens. And then this fellow that he knocked onto the pavement for assaulting and, well, for battery, too, it wasn't him. It was other people watching the parking lot called the police. So the police showed up, and of course, who do they arrest? They always arrest the fellow that's not at fault. That's the way it seemed to work for some reason. I know when I was in that kind of a business where I would periodically be chosen to go patrol, although I was some kind of a policeman, I was told that if you're trying to break up a fight, make sure you grab the fellow that's easiest to get out of the fight. And that may be the little one. It may be the one taking the drubbing. It may be the one doing the drubbing. Whatever you think would be the easiest to get out of the fight, get him out of the fight, and that'll stop the fight. It takes two to fight. Well, I don't know what happened with the policeman, but they got him. And then later on, of course, he was arrested, arraigned, and he's on bail over that now. But then not too long after that, he was in one of these gas stations, and this is the part I wanted to correct. He was in one of these gas stations where there were gas pumps on both sides of a little kind of a building, had doors on both sides. You could come in from either side, and he was standing in line. Of course, the cashier was taking money under the glass like they do. We have bulletproof glass. What a world we live in. And he was waiting, and some fella came behind him, and great big fella. He said he was drunk, and this fella called me. He's not a big fella. He said, I'm a small man, this disabled veteran. His knees are destroyed. And he said this fella began railing on him, belligerent and loud, and began to push him. And so he decked him. I don't know how high up he had to reach to do it, but he had him down on the floor. But before that happened, and this is the part I want to tell you, and this is an important part, an important duty that every person has when someone is threatening them, trying, you don't know what they're going to do, assault and battery, a gun, whatever. If there is a viable means of escape, the law says you have to take it or you're going to be liable. If there is a viable means of escape, the law says, our common law says, you have to take it. But if you turn an attack when there's a way out that's viable, that you know about, and that is reasonable, you take it. Well, he did that. This fella in the building where the gas station cashier was, two doors, one on each side, this fella was getting physical with him. He tried to run out the door. But the door he tried to run out was locked. He didn't know that. He came in the other door. It was locked. And boom, he hit the bar on the door, and it wouldn't open. And so that's when he turned around and commenced to wailing away on this drunk that wanted him to wear a mask. I didn't want to forget that. That's an important part of our legal tradition, is if there's a way of escape. And I like to say to people, if you can avoid a fight, avoid it. If you can avoid it, if you can, avoid it. Well, it's not going to come out good in the end, no matter what. And fighting just to fight because you've had your feelings hurt can be honorable in your own home. Somebody's trying to break into your house or does break in or won't leave when you want them to. That's different. But in a public place, it doesn't always work that way. Well, I wanted today to talk about a story that has fascinated people for centuries. More than centuries. It's about a man who was a law talker. A law talker. I don't know if I mentioned this. I think I did. I talked to so many people, I can't remember who I've said it to and who I haven't. But if you were to go to a federal prison in America or a state prison, the people in those prisons, they divide up into groups. You got your white folk there in one group, and you got your black folk, you're there in another group. It's a cultural thing. And then you got your South Americans or your Central Americans. Then you got your you're if there's any Indians, when I say Indians, I mean American Indians, tribes, Indian tribalmen, they'll often divide into their own. But if they don't, oftentimes the Mexicans and even the Puerto Ricans will join up with the whites. And with each one of these groups, no matter what ethnic group it is, it's as though it's a nation. And each nation has its own ambassador, has its own health department with a healer to help people get healed. And then each one of them has a law talker. This is a microcosm. A prison is a microcosm of a world where a system develops, an economic system cut off from all the rest of the world, an economic system develops of money, usually postage stamps or money, have been in the past. Those other kind of real money or mere money, American money, is not allowed. So no quarters, no dimes, no dollar bills. So postage stamps become important. Other things too, if not postage stamps. But this law talker, he's the fellow I want to talk about here a little bit. He's the fellow that's supposed to know the rules. One fellow in each one of those groups focuses on the rules. Rules of law. And if there's a dispute between two parties, between those groups, there's an altercation. It's possible that somebody may get hurt or killed. Then the law talker is engaged to try to reach some kind of an agreement that would avoid violence. That's what law talkers do, and the healer is the one that gathers all the information he can on how to stay healthy, because if you get sick in prison, you may die. They're not interested in taking care of you. They may, but again, they may not. So the healer, he gathers that material, and the law talker, he knows the law that applies in that world. Well, law talkers have been around for centuries and millennia. And in the Bible, there are law talkers. And even yet today, in our own country, we have law talkers, people that talk law. And what do they call them in the Bible? Remember, the Bible is the second volume of our Fundamental Laws of Americans. The Declaration of 76 calls it the laws of nature's God written. And the laws of nature are the unwritten body of law. We call today our common law, law of the land. Have other names for it through the centuries. But the law talker, he is, now watch me here, the law talker is by analogy, the law talkers of the Bible, and even yet today, are legislators. They're the ones that they pronounce what the law is. The law talker pronounces what the law is. No, the judges, that's different. They pronounce what the application of the law is in a particular set of circumstances. But the law talker pronounces what the law is, the first principles of the law. Moses of the Bible was a law talker. He's called the second greatest prophet. The Bible calls Moses the second greatest prophet. Who's the greatest prophet? Now, Jesus Christ, the Messiah of God. Remember the disciples, one of them said to the other, and said, come see. And he was going to become impaneled in that 12-man jury that Jesus Christ impaneled, just grabbed 12 men standing around, impaneled them to witness the evidence of his identity. And one of them grabbed the other one and said, come see, you got to come and look. I found the prophet, the law talker, greater than Moses. We'll see Jesus Christ, the greatest law talker, Moses, the second greatest. But everything in the Bible, of course, Moses received the law from the Messiah of God in the Old Testament. He said, well, he wasn't even born yet. No, yeah, well, he just entered the stream of humanity. He had been around since the beginning, a member of the Godhead, the Bible tells us. He created all things. He was the active agency of the Godhead. But he is the greatest law talker. Now, other law talkers, Moses, Jesus Christ was the greatest, then Moses. But then there were all these other law talkers. We've got the record of 17 law talkers in the Bible. the five major prophets, the prophets, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, and Daniel. Lamentations is Jeremiah. And then there are 12 minor. We call them minor just because they're shorter, not that they're any less important. They are just as important and have equal dignity with all the rest of the Bible. But these prophets are the law talkers, the Navi'im of the Old Testament in the plural. They'd talk law. They knew it. Well, there's one prophet. Here's what I wanted to get to. There's a prophet in the book of 1 Kings, but he wasn't one of them that wrote one of the books of the Bible, one of those 17, 1 Kings chapter 22. He was around during the days when Ahab was king of Israel, the northern kingdom there. Ahab. And Ahab had a wife coiled up like a serpent on the throne next to him, like a serpent, and her name was Jezebel. We've got some of those in Congress today, Jezebels. And it says that Ahab was more evil than any king ever was, hardly ever would be. Nobody was more evil than him. There'd never been seen a king like that, as that evil. And he was evil at the behest of that snake curled up, well, as it were a snake, Jezebel, his wife, exceedingly beautiful woman, and exceedingly murderous and dangerous. And well, just think of Nancy Pelosi. Think of Hillary Clinton. I don't say that in jest. You're talking about murderous women that are lustful for blood. They love to murder babies. They love to see babies murdered. They like to see the military go around the world, murder people that they want murdered. Forget the trial. Just send in the drones. Send in the SEAL teams. Kill them. Just kill them. Send in the useful idiots. They'll do anything we say. Well, they do. They just kill them. Well, that's the way Jezebel was. And Ahab had on the throne there. And he hadn't had a war in 3 years. 3 full years, no war. Now, if a king doesn't have a war, he starts losing popularity. People don't pay much attention to him. Wars make people loyal to the king. That's why Barack Obama was always bombing somebody. Bill Clinton was bombing aspirin factories just to make it look like he was at war. Remember that? Yeah. War makes kings, and kings make war, and when kings make war, they make more kings, and round and round she goes. Well, kings make war, and war empowers kings. So what do we got Biden doing? He's attacking Syria. For what? Are they bothering us? Not that I know of. Could it be that it's a Christian nation? I mentioned this the other night. Syria is fundamentally Christian. Oh, there are Islamic people there. Why don't they go bother somebody else? Well, who's telling them to murder Syrians? I mean, even if they aren't Christian, does that mean we have license to murder whoever, Joe Biden or his handlers? I think he's got handlers. I don't think he has a clue what he's doing. Do you? I don't know. Seems that way to me. But Ahab hadn't had a war in 3 years, and he was on a stretch to have one to kind of boost his popularity and his visibility. And so they decided they go attack somebody. The king of Israel, it says here, verse 6, chapter 22, the king of Israel, Ahab, gathered the law talkers together. The law talkers, that's the prophets. 400 of them he gathered together. Because he went down, what happened was, he went down to the southern kingdom and he asked the king down there. He said, I want you to join me in war against somebody, and he picked out Ramoth-Gilead. Yeah, Ramoth-Gilead. I know you don't know where that is, but he said, go you to battle with me to Ramoth-Gilead? Question. And this other king said, well, I'm like you, my folk, my people, that's the militia, the people are the militia. My militia like your folk. My horses like your horses. Let's get started. And then he says unto the king of Israel, Ahab, he said, but would you first ask the Lord and ask the law talkers of Israel? And the king of Israel, it says, gathered the law talkers, about 400 men, 400 law talkers. That's like gathering Congress together, the law talkers. And says to them, should I go up against Ramoth-Gilead to battle, or should I forbear? Should I go to battle or not? And they said, go up. 400 prophets said, go up, because the Lord delivers it into the hand of the king. Get up there, all 400. 400 prophets can't be wrong. Verse 7, and the king of the south says, no, he says, a law talker of the Lord is here besides these 400. Maybe we should ask him just one more. I want to ask just one more if we should do this. Even though 400 agreed unanimously, and the king of Israel in the north, Ahab, says to the king of the south in Judah, he said, there's one man, one law talker, his name is Micaiah, son of Imlah. Micaiah. And by the way, this story about Micaiah is the only thing we know about Micaiah in the whole Bible. There's one man, Micaiah, by whom we seek of the Lord, and I hate him, says Ahab, because he tells forth no good thing about me, but rather always something bad. I don't want to ask him. Yeah. And he happens, and the king of the south says, let not the king say so. And the king of Israel in the north called a gilded man. That means a man that's had his testicles cut off. A gilded man. That means a eunuch. There's different ways you can say it. He was a eunuch. It's the kind of people they used to keep in the court so they wouldn't be messing around with their daughters and their wives and whatnot. Or they thought they wouldn't, but they did anyway. Funny thing how you can do that to a man and it doesn't take away his drive. Must all be in the head. I don't know. How do I know? Because Origen, one of the church fathers, did that very thing, thinking he could get rid of his overwhelming drive for sex. And he said in his commentary, the book of Galatians, it didn't do it a bit of good. Didn't do a bit of good. You can't cut off parts of your body and get rid of your problem if you think it's a problem. Well, anyway, the king of Israel, that's called mutilation. It's against the law. God said, don't do that. It's against our common law, too, mutilation. It's against the law to do that to yourself. Murder is against the law. Suicide, they call it. It's against the law. It's a crime. I know it's hard to enforce. Of course, attempted suicide can be punished if you're convicted of it. Well, don't do that. It's a rather harsh way to exercise self-criticism, I like to say. Well, he says, I hate this guy because he always tells me bad things, not good things. So I don't even want to ask him. And the king of Israel called a gilded man, this eunuch, and says, hasten hither, Micaiah, son of Imlah. And the king of Israel, that's the guy in the north, Ahab, Ahab in the north. And the king of Judah, the one in the south, sat down on his high seat, having put on their robes and all their splendor and all that baloney, in an empty place at the entrance of the gate of safeguard, that's Samaria, that's what that means. And all the law talkers talked law before their faces. I'm reading from the Winterized Version. All the law talkers talked law. And Zedekiah, son of Chineah, made him horns of iron. Then he says, thus said the Lord, with these you gore the Syrians with these horns of iron I have made until you eat them up. This is a prophet talking, see. And all the law talkers talk law thusly to say, go up toward Ramoth-Gilead and forge ahead, and he happens, thus the Lord, has given it into the king's hand. And the fellow, the government agent, who walked to call Micaiah, has spelt it out to him, saying, wow, please, the arranged words of the law talkers are good unto the king with oneness of mouth. We're all in unanimity here. Please let it happen to the king. Please let your arranged word become, he's talking to Micaiah, you let your word become like the arranged word with as one from them, all be together. And Micaiah says this. Listen to what Micaiah says. He's the one guy they hadn't asked yet out of the 400. There are 400 others. He says, the Lord lives, because namely what he happens says unto me, namely I spell it out. Whatever he says, that's what I say. If he says it, I just repeat it. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm just repeating what God said. I'm just repeating it. And he comes unto the king, and the king says unto him, Micaiah, should we go against Ramoth-Gilead to battle, or should we forbear? And Micaiah says, walk! and carry it out, because the Lord delivers it into the hand of the king. And the king says to him, how many times swore I you that you arranged no words unto me, but only stalwartness within the name right of the Lord? And he says, I saw all Israel scattered upon the hills. So he says to him at first, he's being facetious here. He said, oh yeah, go up to battle. He's mocking the king. Go on up, just like the 400 told you. And the king knew he was pulling his leg. And he said, I knew you wouldn't say anything right. And he said, I saw all Israel scattered upon the hills like sheep that have no shepherd. All Israel scattered upon the hills. And the Lord says, he's repeating the words of God himself, the true lawgiver, the final arbiter of right and wrong, from whose decision there is no appeal. He says, these have no master. Let them return every man to his house, and God arranged right. And then he says to the others, did I not tell you he would talk law, no good about me, but rather only bad? Wow. Well, what happened? Well, just like he said, they lost their king. The shepherd was gone. It was an analogy to shepherd a sheep. Ahab thought he was out of range, and some kid on the other side in the army picked up a bow with an arrow and just kind of pointed it up about a 45-degree angle and just to see if he could shoot it far enough into the lines of Israel. A bow shot at a venture, it says in the Bible. And that one arrow, by happen chance, not only struck Ahab, but struck him between the chinks of his armor. It didn't hit his armor. It went right through a chink. He fell forward in his chariot. The blood started to run out, and before they could get the chariot back, he was deader than a ring bolt, stiffer than a hammerhead. And just like the prophet did say later, the dogs licked his blood up before they had time to wash the chariot out. The dogs came and licked up the blood. And what Micaiah said came to pass. What Micaiah said happened. And what the 400 said, just the opposite happened to what the 400 said. The 400 law talkers. But the one law talker, the one that always just said what God said, well, that happened. Now, don't get the idea that because everybody's saying it, it's true. That's the point of this, of many points here, of this narrative, this historical record. 400 men called men of God, law talkers of God, said it was true. And they're all liars. How do you know who's telling the truth? There's only one way to know. Only one way to know who's telling the truth. You check it out with a book. There is no other way. If the book makes it clear that that mayor is not true, then you know it's not true. Now, I know every time a so-called man of God or a law talker, a legislator, says something, you can go to the book and look, and there won't be any way that you could tell from what the book says whether or not the book doesn't speak to that particular question, for instance. But there are a lot of times when the book does speak to a particular question. A lot of times. I've lived long enough to see that more times than not, the principles, the first principles of this book will speak to that question. The first principles of this book tell us whether or not we should wear a mask. I had a lady tell me, I know I'm still railing on this. This is no small matter, friends, neighbors, and kin. This is huge. This is making a fool out of people. Fools. The folly of their lives. I went into a gas station today. I travel a lot. I went into a gas station. It was one that I knew. It was a chain. It's pretty big, some parts of the country. Nobody had a mask on, but the people working there. Every time I go in, I know I might face a problem. I could tell I wasn't going through there. And I heard somebody talking to this lady that looked like the manager. Said something about masks because I was coming out of the boys' room. Well, I came out and I walked back behind the counter, where all the people were working. And this gal was talking to another gal, and I said, I need to talk to that gal there. I pointed to her. And she said, what's the matter? I said, who's the manager here? She said, well, I'm the manager of this, and she's the manager of that. I said, who's in charge of cleaning these bathrooms, these men's rooms here? I knew that would get their attention. Boy, they panicked. Said, well, is there something wrong? I said, no, I wanted to talk to the person responsible for it. And the lady said, well, I am. Is everything okay? Is something? I said, no. I just wanted to tell you, I've never been in a cleaner men's room. I can't remember ever being in a cleaner men's room. Looks like you took a fire hose in there and blasted that place out. Tile was on the floor up almost the ceiling. And then there was relief, broke the tension. And she said, yeah, we try to keep. She told me how she did it and how they got this pump they take in there. And they I said, that's the only way to do a men's room. Now, I won't say a girl's room's that way, but men are like animals. You know, you got to just flush the thing out with 180 pounds per square inch and a fire hose or something. Well, anyway, they cleaned it up. And then I got to ask her, I said, what's the policy here? I heard you talking to this lady about the face mask. I said, you have them on. Do you require them to be worn here? No, we don't. And I said, well, was there a time when you did? Oh, yeah, there was a time when we did. When all this first started a year ago, they came down with all the mandates and the laws. I said, was there a mandate here? Well, there's a mandate in the town, but not in the county. And then they made it in the county and not the town. I said, well, is that something we have to obey? And she said, well, yeah, you could get fined if you don't do it. I said, but do you have to? Come on, tell me, is it a law or not? Well, she said, a law, you know, I know you have to do, but a mandate's different. I said, okay, how's it different? Well, she said, she was friendly, see, and she was just, and I wanted to see what she'd say. And finally, she took a breather, and I said, well, it seems to me like you are trying to answer my question, but the truth is you don't have a clue what a mandate is. Is that true? And then she laughed again, said, no, I don't know. I said, well, I'll tell you something. She said, what is it? I said, I've been practicing law for a few decades. And she said, you have? I said, yeah. Well, what is it? I said, I don't have a clue. And if I don't have a clue, should I expect anybody else to have a clue what the difference is? I mean, you can go look it up, but it's anybody's guess. The judges don't deal with it. It's a ruse, my friends. It's something that's been foisted upon us to destroy our families, destroy our businesses, hamper us. It's a pinch of incense that the emperor says we must put in the incenser every year and pay homage to the empire, and then go back and do whatever we want. Well, you don't need to do that. And if we do that, we're bowing the knee. No, we're bowing two knees. You're bowing two knees to the evil empire, to idols. What idol? Well, the ones over in communist China, for a start, the living idols, the created men over there, created things they are, that people take to be lawgivers. Bill Gates, he is a god. He's wealthy. He got to know what he's talking about. 400 prophets didn't know what they were talking about or knew and lied. Who can you trust? Well, the laws of nature and the laws of nature's God. The laws of nature tell us, and the laws of nature's God, the book itself tells us that if someone's sick, you quarantine them. If they've got a deadly disease, you quarantine them. Never in the law of God, and it's very specific and particular about that, never do you quarantine people that are well. God spoke to that issue centuries ago. Why aren't we paying any attention? People, I suppose, think that the Bible's just another book or something. I don't know what they think. I do know it doesn't have the dignity in people's minds it did when I was a boy. Not at all. There was some reverence there for it. These are the very words of our Maker, the very sentences of God, the writs of the Creator of all things. He tells us how to handle our problems. The first principles are there. They're all there. Well, this is Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com, coming at you from the hinterlands of the Wabash River Valley. I say that when I'm on the radio. It's fun to say. I guess I need to stay in practice, but this is Brent. Thank you, John.
Okay, thank you, Brent.
Time, as you have done many times before, and back to you.
Thank you. Okay, Gerard, do you want to take the mic for a while, or what do you want to do? And will Terry control the board? And I know Gerard may not even be here right now. I don't see him. All right, well.
Okay.
Oh, there you go. Okay, you want to take control?
I got the board up, but I don't know if it's working now all of a sudden, so.
All right. Well, if you run into a problem, Terry will help you, and I'll be here too. But go right ahead. You got the mic. By the way, someone unmuted Benjamin from Arizona here, and I just muted him. So you might want to unmute him first before you take the next caller. Otherwise, we'll lose Benjamin.
Okay. I will unmute Benjamin from Arizona. Go ahead, Benjamin. You're unmuted.
Yeah, John, Ben Clark. I'm getting a lot of questions regarding the proposed uniform rules and resolutions for the militia.
Mm-hmm.
Based on those questions, some, shall I say, members of various organizations say that based on the proposed rules that the state has already indicated that they will pick the officers for the militia.
Well, you know what? We do have an expert on this, who, and that, of course, is Brent. Brent, hopefully you're still here. Maybe you can respond to this. Now, he's talking about, remember we got together and we put together rules for the militia, and of course, you know, these rules can be added to and worked upon, but we have to maintain within the structure of common law. So let me pass this over to Brent to respond.
I'm here, John. Thank you. And the way I heard the question was that somebody said that the cities would choose the officers of the militia. Is that what I heard you say?
That's a negative.
Okay. Yeah,
the indication was that the state level would pick the officers for the various state and county militia leadership.
Well, that's true. That's what the Constitution says. The federal government, the general government in Washington, D.C., has no authority. The Constitution does not delegate authority to the President of the United States, for instance, or one of his appointees or some federal judge to appoint the militia officers. That is given over to the power of the states. And the states, then, how they see fit, can establish how it's done. Now, I'm going to refer you to a booklet. Go to commonlawyer.com, and there's a booklet there, booklet 100 pages long. It's called The Militia of the Several States, Our Constitution's Answer to Its Enemies, Foreign and Domestic. And in that book, yours truly tries to break down the four militia clauses of a United States Constitution. There are four. And the last one, the fourth one, is the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment is the only one of the four militia clauses that does not delegate any authority. It recognizes authority that God has delegated. The other three delegate authority to three classes of persons. The first militia clause delegates authority to presidents, that class of persons called presidents of the United States. The second militia clause delegates authority to the Congress of the United States, the legislative branch, and the third militia clause delegates authority to the governments of the states. Now, the president of the Confederacy during that terrible, awful, ugly war where Americans slaughtered each other like animals to the tune of about 600,000 men, just before that, the president of the United States appointed the man that would be the president of the Confederacy, Jefferson Davis, tried to appoint him commander of a militia unit because he was a West Point graduate. He figured he was qualified. And Jefferson Davis turned him down, said, "You can't do that. The appointment of officers of the militia of the several states belongs to the states." But the Constitution of the United States does not set forth particularly how the states are to do that. Now, in that booklet that I referred you to, in the back of it, I put a model state militia statute that I want. I wrote it for people to give to the state legislators so that they would put something like that. They could change it maybe a little. Maybe I'm not the smartest guy in the world, and I didn't draft it perfectly, but I tried to put together a way for the states to choose their militia officers. And what I did was, I said that the militia officers would be chosen at the county level and even down to the township level to choose squad leaders, etc. But then, of course, the commander of the state militia would be an appointee of the governor of the state. But let me read these militia clauses to you real quick. The first militia clause, I put first, second, third, and I said the first was about the president. That wasn't the first in order. But the first one in order says the Congress shall have power to provide for the calling forth of the militia. Provide for the calling forth of the militia to execute, three reasons, execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections and repel invasions, to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States. That one, you see, delegates authority, that it is jurisdiction to Congress to do something. To set forth the rules for calling forth a militia, and the president then has that power. The second militia clause, in order, says reserving to the states respectively, that means each one of them, the appointment of the officers. The states, well, who in the states is to do that? Well, that's up to the states. The state legislature, when it puts a militia clause in place, which they haven't done in most states, they haven't fulfilled their constitutional duty, once they put that in place, they can say how they want that done. But just so the general government sitting in Washington, D.C., doesn't have that power. As a matter of fact, right now, I'm take a chance and distract you from the issue, from the subject. I don't know that we have a general government in Washington, D.C. right now. I'm not convinced. and I know that sounds funny to some. Of course, it is laughable. But I'm, of course, serious, too. I know of no general government in Washington, D.C. I know of something going on there. I don't know what it is. Obviously, they have no authority. The government that's there wasn't duly, by the process the Constitution describes, put in place. I know that for sure, no question. And if that's true, then the government that is there is illegitimate. I throw these questions out because I'm a man that's responsible, as everybody is, to the degree of the light that God has given them. To the degree of the light that God has given you, you're responsible to do something with that and to say what you believe to be true. 400 prophets, everybody, all of Congress, you have to say that the election was not fraudulent. You have to say that or they will, and they're threatening to jail you, to not go along with all the false prophets, all the 400 of them. Is it, you know, let me get to the second militia clause. Then the third militia clause says the president, that's the class of persons called presidents, shall be commander-in-chief of the militia of the several states. He's the commander-in-chief of the militia of the several states. When, that's an important word, only when, called into the actual service of the United States. Well, who has the power to call them into the service of the United States? The President of the United States. Well, what if the governor calls them first? Well, the President misses his opportunity. What if the President calls them first? Well, the governor doesn't have control of them anymore. That's the way it works. That's the way the law works. That's the way our Constitution's division of powers between the general government in Washington, D.C., and the state governments work. The fourth militia clause, let me read it. This is the only militia clause that delegates no authority to anybody, but simply recognizes and promises that authority of the individual man, the militia member, to carry a loaded gun, the authority that his creator gave him. You say, well, the creator, when he created man, there were no guns. Well, number one, you don't know that, and I don't either. That's speculation, but to say there aren't, it seems that there probably weren't. I don't see them recorded in ancient history that way. But still, a man, by first principle, this is why we call the law of God is first principles. A man has a duty. What is a duty? It's a right. A right is a duty. No, a duty is not accompanied by a right. Every duty, every right is accompanied by a duty. No. Never was that way. That's a lie of the evil empire. They got attorneys saying that kind of stuff. They got judges saying it's not true. A right, as a matter of fact, it's an old Germanic word. Anglo-Saxon is a Germanic tongue. And right, Reicht, means duty. Matter of fact, their name for our common law was Volk. Volk, we say folk. Volk, Reicht. That means common law, the duty, Volk. That means people, the militia, by the way, We the people, that is a special class of persons that takes in the males of our country, the militia. That class of persons has the duty to not only protect themselves, oh, by the way, the female has a duty to protect herself too, and her children, and her husband if she has to, and anybody else, but she's not a member of the militia. That's different. But every person has a God-given duty to protect your life and your limb. And if you don't do that, you're sinning. That's a tough job, friends. It's tough. It's tough to defend yourself in the face. Oh, don't think it isn't. If you've never been in a fight, you're not, well, you've surely been in one or been threatened by one. It's not always easy. Sometimes, as I said a while ago, the best thing to do is to run, and the law would demand it if there's a way out. Avoid a fight at all costs. That's not the right thing. Avoid a fight if you can. Avoid a fight if you can. But there comes those times when a fella can't avoid a fight, and a gal can't avoid a fight either, but I'd say to the gals also, avoid a fight if you can. Somebody's going to get hurt, and feelings are going to get hurt, and somebody's going to get killed, and somebody's going to get maimed, and it's just ugly, 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 ugly. But there are those times when you have a duty to defend yourself, defend your neighbors, defend your family, and you don't have any choice but to do your duty, that is your right. Well, so there are four militia clauses, and the states, I just read it here, yeah, the states, respectively, have the duty of appointment of officers. Have they done that in your state? No, probably not. Haven't done it in any state I know of these days. They say, well, we got the National Guard. That's not the militia. That is not the militia. The National Guard is not the militia. They're funded. The National Guard funded by the feds. Listen, the militia, the common law militia, the rules of our common law, militia, without the common law, our Constitution, every phrase, every word of our Constitution of the United States becomes a dissembled, dry, and dispirited skeleton of words. The common law informs our Constitution at every point, every word, every phrase. The common law breathes life into that skeleton of words called our Constitution, and it becomes sturge, and it stands up and walks. That's why it's so boring. That's why it is a document. As Sam Clemens says, it's like a classic book. What's a classic book? It's a book that everybody says needs to be read, and nobody's read it. Well, that's what the Constitution is. It's a document that everybody says ought to be read, but nobody has. Why not? I'll tell you why. Because it's boring. It's just rules. But without breathing life into it, what breathes life into it? A real case in controversy, and then the common law comes to bear. Now listen, if you're going to read the Constitution of the United States, it has always been published with that real case in controversy document called the Declaration of 76. They must be read together, and I refer you also, go to commonlawyer.com, get the book, Declaration of 76, no, it says Constitution of the United States and Declaration of 76, both of them together. And they're interpreted together and understood together, they're very much alike, it's just that one's a real case in controversy document, a common law complaint, as it were, of real things that were happening called the Declaration of 76. You get that book, it's about 200 pages, a common lawyer comments, it says. Our Declaration of 76, Constitution, a common lawyer comments, clause by clause, blow by blow. And my object there was to breathe some life into that writing that we call the Constitution of the United States. Don't feel funny if you think it's dry or you don't know that much about it or you feel ignorant of it. Don't feel funny. Don't feel stupid. Here's what you do. You just read a little bit of it every day, just a little bit, and read it with the Declaration of 76. Now, I put comments in that book. It's in order, blow by blow, clause by clause. I'll print a clause, and then I'll try to make a few short sentences about what it means and what historically was going on, especially the Declaration of 76. And then when I go to the Constitution, I refer you back to the Declaration of 76, the complaint, where it says, well, here's what the king's doing. Oh, let's go to the Constitution. What was he doing? Well, he was searching without a warrant. He was using a document called the Writs of Assistance. That's where an ignorant bureaucrat signs a piece of paper and says, I got a warrant. Can you imagine an IRS agent? Imagine? No, it really happens. He says, I want to get whatever that guy's got. I wonder what's in his house. Signs a piece of paper. I want everything in your house. Every piece of paper. And sign it. Well, we border on that kind of stuff. Matter of fact, it's happening. Same thing. It never changes. 250 years ago, things haven't changed. Well, you go to the Declaration of 76, we see that Admiralty law is being applied. What's that? Well, that's martial law, the law of the sea. It's a good law, confined to its proper place. The ships on the high seas, but they extended it from the ships onto the docks, into the warehouses, and they used these writs of assistance to search the warehouses. And then they said, well, you've taken it from the warehouse to your house. It's contraband. You didn't pay a tax on it. We got this writ of assistance. We want to bust your door down your house, search your house. And the Admiralty law then, see, began to spread that way, from ships to the docks, to the warehouses on the docks, to the warehouses in town in Boston, then to the homes. Yeah. And it got so bad, then they started putting soldiers, quartering soldiers in homes. It says that in the Declaration of 76. Well, what do we have then in the Constitution? We have specific clauses of our Constitution that deal with those problems. Yeah, so the Declaration of 76, a real case in controversy document, a common law complaint, as it were, breathes life, the breath of life, into our Constitution of the United States, like Ezekiel and the dry bones. Sinew upon sinew and bone upon bone, the leg bones connected to the hip bone, then the Constitution begins to come together. That's what I tried to do with these four clauses. I said these four clauses are like four bones. Why aren't we paying attention to them? The Constitution is not walking. It's not alive because until we get these bones attached together, these four militia clauses, they dovetail together, then they mean something. If the states were to pass this Model Militia Act, something like it that I've got in the back of that book about the militia, get that to your state legislators. Get it to them. Say, we got to pass this. The Constitution says, if you don't do something about it, you're history, bud. You're sitting up there like you're important. Okay, you're important. But that means you got to do what our fundamental law demands that you do. You got to pass a state militia statute that appoints officers. Listen, if the states will do that, that'll get the federal government's attention. They don't want that. And then they're going to try to, the only thing they can do then is say, well, the president has to have this. Congress has to pass legislation. And it says here, making uniform for the training of the militia in every state, standards, the states have to pass standards with the state militia statute, and I've got that in there. What kind of firearms? See, with a militia, every member must obtain his own firearm, the one the state legislature says he has to have, a military-grade weapon, the amount of rounds of ammunition the state legislature says he has to have, and then he must obtain a marksmanship and safety course that it meets the approval of the state militia statute that the state legislature says he has to have. And he has to do it with his own money. That's it. That's the difference. The National Guard doesn't do what they do with their own money. You see, if you're doing it with your own money, it's your rifle, your weapon, your ammunition. That puts a whole new color on the whole idea. It makes the militia the militia. It makes it the furred fair of the Anglo-Saxons. And it would draw men together, draw our country together, bring a commonness of experience to young men, old men, and then the young men coming up would have a rite of passage. Well, when I get to be 18 or 20 or whatever the state militia statute says, I got to get a rifle. Oh, they'd be complaining. You know, I got to get a job because I got to get a rifle. Oh, they'll be complaining, but they'll be bragging in their complaint. That's why they're complaining, because they're bragging, I'm a man now. That's the way boys do. And that's intended to work that way. And that's why you go to the Bible and you see all of these rules of the militia, the 12 tribes of Israel, and you begin to see the analogous nature between the militia of the 12 tribes of Israel and the militia common law. And in that book about the militia, I bring all those passages from the book of Deuteronomy to bear, and I try to unpack them, the simplicity of them. Never in the history of the world, of Adam's kind, has there ever been such a straight, simple, forward law of a militia since the days of Israel, of ancient of old, as we have in our Constitution of the United States. It's beautiful. Nobody has it except us. We've enshrined it there. All we have to do now is do what it tells us to do. And there are four classes of persons here that need to do that. Back to you, John, or whoever's got Gerard, you there.
Thank you. All right, Benjamin, you got a final comment or question before we go to the next caller? And Gerard, are you back?
Well, you know, I've sat here and listened to Mr. Winters, and yes, he has a lot of information and probably very legit information. But it still doesn't change the attitude of these folks running these deals out here.
So the attitude
They do not want the state involved in anything they do.
Well, that's why we got the organized and the unorganized militia. And, you know, everyone is part of the militia. And we have to reset the whole thing, from my opinion, you know, from the ground up. And we have to organize both. And then at some point, you know, the governor has to, does have to take control of that militia to some degree. But first you have to form it, because as Brent said, they haven't even formed it. And the National Guard is not the militia. But look, at as far as we're concerned, what we're going to do, we're going to be working with the sheriff on the county levels. We're building committees of safety on the county levels. And we're going to train the people to follow the Constitution to the best that they can. And we'll be here, of course, for, to answer questions. We've done a course on the militia. And again, we really used Brent's book, handbook, to do that course with. And with his approval, we put it up there. And we really gave a lot of thought and work into putting together, you know, some basic rules for the militia. You know, and the people have to, you know, build it from ground up. Now, again, people who don't want, who want to go a different route that's outside of the Constitution, and or do things that may not be appropriate, well, we don't want to have part of them. We want to try to convince them to show them what the law is, and let's follow that, because we are a people of the law. And the Constitution ultimately is the law, the three founding documents ultimately. But and of course there is, of course, the legislation, where there's proper legislation for different things, and that would be on the state level and the federal level. There's inappropriate legislation also that we have to clean up, and we're working that out with the Republic Review. And so a lot of work needs to be done, and people need to come together, and we need to do this correctly. So
look, I understand why they don't want the state involved. It's because they don't trust them, because they're so corrupt. But if you follow the Constitution, it takes care of itself. Look, at the Constitution provided for, so the state picks the officers, big deal. The state doesn't run them, but the governor can call the militia out anytime he wants. He's part of the executive branch. This is the way this country was set up. Now, if he does something unconstitutional, you take him out. You know, we have lots of methodologies to taking out people.
Again, the organizing of the Committee of Safety, working with all those things.
Right, so
we'll have the power.
The state is not the problem, and them picking the officers of the militia. I mean, maybe they could pick somebody that's got some influence, one of their own people, but they're certainly not going to be running the militia. And even those officers of the militia, I don't know that they have any authority to call the militia out. They can run the men once there's an action going.
And the committee men can fix any problem that when these people break their oaths and try to get involved in doing things that are inappropriate, the committee men have the power to remove them from office. And again, that's why the people need to become the committee men. Right now, they're not the committee men. The people also need to be involved in the juries and the administration with the juries, where we can even do indictments on people that abuse their powers. So there's lots of things that we, the people, can do. The problem is we don't control those two power structures. They do. And we need to get those controls back.
Anyway, my point is that if we stick to the Constitution, the way it was written and the way it was intended, I don't think you're going to get in trouble. Right. I understand why those people have a bad taste in their mouth about the state picking the officers, because it gives the state. And I mean, when you say the state, you must be talking about, you know, the legislator, I guess, right? I mean, who, when they say the state's going to pick them, well, who in the state's going to pick them? It's going to be the legislative body, I guess, wouldn't it? I don't even know.
Yeah, but I would imagine that would be the case. But again, you know, each state would have to work that out. I don't know. There doesn't seem to be any specific on the federal level as far as the Constitution is concerned. But within the constitutions of the states, there's probably some details in there about this, but we'd have to look each state as they go. But one
that's why the sheriff makes sense. The sheriff makes sense because he's local to the county.
Right.
He knows what he knows the lay of the land. He knows the people of the county. So if I was going to have anybody pick officers of the militia, I'd feel more comfortable with the sheriff doing it.
Yeah, but it's got to be, again, I think the legislation has to get involved. The state in itself, not the sheriff, but the state. But here's the key thing. These are worries not to be worried about if you understand what we put together, and not that we put it together. Well, we are reconstructing what our founding fathers did with the committees of safety, taking control of the political, taking control of the judicial, taking control of the things that we need to be taking control of. You know, it's our duty to do these things. And if we exercise the Constitution and we take the controls, there's nothing to worry about. The governor can't go out of control. We can control him. The legislators can't go out of control. We can control them. After all, we have nullification, power of the jury nullification, but the people themselves have nullification. So the thing is they're ignorant to the powers that's available to them, so they fear it, and then they want, and because they see the problems that within the states, I guess, they're in. What state are we talking about, by the way? Are we talking about Arizona?
Yes.
Okay. So, again, I don't know.
But John, look, I'm not talking about the complete state of Arizona as far as people are concerned. I'm in one county, and those are the people that I run across all the time. And they do mention, gee, if we could just do what the Constitution says. So well, they're aware of the Constitution.
But they may not be aware of the details and have learned it. So all they have to do is we have to instruct them, and they need to obey that instruction. Not that they're not obeying us, but they're obeying.
You know what, Benjamin? You know what I think you should do? I think you should turn them on to Brent's books. There's two books on the militia. Let them read that, and then let them
And take the course and get involved in the committee.
Right, because they
work out.
They're working to the best of their ability for the knowledge that they have. And I'm telling you, I learned some stuff in that book that I had no idea existed. You know?
John, I've already taken the course, and I was picked and selected by the state director as the county director.
Right.
This is what I'm trying to tell you. I get this feedback, not from every county, but the one that I'm in, and these are the feelings. And again,
we're always going to get people who come in with some ignorance. They may have a little bit of knowledge, may be more dangerous than no knowledge, you know, sometimes. But you have a little bit of knowledge, and then they come in and they don't have all the details, and they haven't done their homework enough, and they're doing the wrong things, and we got to correct them. And when people don't want to accept that correction, we need to be very careful as to not empower them within ourselves, the groups, of course, within the county, the committees of safety. People need to control themselves, and they need to conform to what the common law really lays out. And again, I think Brent done a great job in bringing that together, what the common law had to say and what the Constitution, applying the legislation or particularly the words in the Constitution and any lawful legislation. And that's what we got to work with. And we were very, you know, I know when we put this together, get involved with the militia, we were very concerned to make sure we do it right because we can't just take a situation and allow people to injure other people because they misinterpret something and cause more problems than good, maybe. But we just have to learn.
Look, do we even know the process that the state would take to pick officers of the militia? We don't even know what that is. And maybe if those guys knew what it was, it wouldn't be as big of a problem as they're thinking it is. Or maybe it's a worse problem. I don't know. But that seems to me that you got to have that knowledge before you make any decisions. How
obviously it would be someone with some military background that has a rank
who knows? Is it written into the state constitution? I mean, how does the state pick officers for the militia?
Again, this information may be in every state constitution or in some of the state constitutions.
Well, somebody needs to find that out because guys want to make a decision.
That is the duty of the people. Now,
right.
you know, I, you know, we, if National Liberty Alliance had funded more, well, we don't really have funding at all, but look, if we had money and were able to hire people and put together and do some studies on this and really get involved in state by state, we need to do the same thing right now with the committee man. We need to understand the law, the election law in each state, okay, and understand what they have done or what they said concerning the committee man. And some states have set up the straw man right off the bat. They never came to the knowledge of the truth of how to put the committee man process together and who they are and the powers and the authorities and the fact that they're elected and they have to be elected within their own election district. You know, some of the states have already got legislation that destroys that idea or just doesn't even address it. And either in any event, we nullify the error on the one end, and we create and do what is common knowledge and logical and just on the other side of it, you know, and we make it up as we go according to the way it should go. As far as, you know, you look to New York State. New York State in the old law had a lot of good stuff in the election law. And we've got some bad stuff in the latter election law. But we'll nullify the one and hold to the other, the one that is, you know, in harmony with common law. That's simple in my opinion.
Well, you know, we talk about backgrounds. If you knew the makeup of the state of Arizona in regards to the number of veterans that are retired and live here, and a lot of those are in the National Guard, the Air Guard, that guard, whatever guard, it's not like they don't understand and have probably read and then preached the Constitution all their military career.
Well, I got news for you. That's who the militia is going to be. And these guys are coming home from Afghanistan and stuff, and when they find out that all the crap that's been going on since before Bush, it's all a lie, they're blowing their brains out. I'm telling you. It's terrible. But you know what? We got to get to them and give them hope, because when it comes time to engage them, all these special forces guys that are living in the streets that have highly trained, we got to grab them up and put them in our militias, because that's where they belong. And they should be preaching to those veterans. They're a force to be reckoned with, you know.
Well, I understand, sir. I'm a Vietnam vet. That shows you where I've been.
Yeah, so we don't want to lose that talent. We should have something going. The vets should have something where they can. Of course, you know, in the past you used that MILITA word. You were a terrorist. It's kind of good.
Yeah.
At least we can say it today, because people are fed up, thanks to Donald Trump, they're rediscovering the Constitution. You know, not that these guys didn't know it, but it wasn't said on the news. It wasn't said in public. They were trying to kill it. So this is part of the awakening, basically.
I understand, and I'm just looking for a path for me to follow to try to make it right and get these people out there. And if they are missing some part of the Constitution they need to be brought up to speed on, then we can do that. I'm just looking for a path.
Well, here's what I'll tell you, just before you go on. Dealing with Bob Schultz, I learned one thing. You got to read your state constitution, because the state constitution is supposed to handle the stuff that the state's authority is. It might be right in the state constitution. Somebody got to grab that Arizona state constitution and go through it and see what they put in there for the militia. And that might straighten them guys right out. That might give you the answer right there.
And again, this needs to be a discussion on the county level, okay, face-to-face at a meeting. You know, your county, your monthly meetings, and it should be monthly. It doesn't have to be any more than a couple hours in the evening. One day you figure that out. But look, you need to have face-to-face meetings in order to grow together, study together, organize together, communicate together, educate together, bring these different, you know, the committee men together, and make sure we get people in all election districts, also in our court system, work together with the problem, start working together in the local community. Again, all this is in our plan on how to build, how to create a committee of safety within your county. Now, on top of that, there needs to be a committee of correspondence, so a chair, an additional chairperson for the committee of correspondence that sits on the main committee needs to be involved, and that person is to be communicating with other committees of correspondences in other counties where they have a problem and they came up with a solution, and you share it with the other people in the other committees that have the committees of correspondence. They bring it to their county, they discuss it, and you grow. We do it on a national level. National Liberty Alliance would be doing it also, and maybe creating more paperwork in the sense of writing more information, doing some more research, or even just discussing it, and or doing a PowerPoint, a video PowerPoint. But again, it has to be worked out by the people. And the people that refuse to be corrected, I would say then you're going to have to be very careful not allowing these people to get too involved in certain things, because you will get the egotistic. Someone with a great ego to come in and try to take control of things, you'll get this will always happen, and you got to keep your eyes out for them. You'll get the enemy who'll come in to try to subvert. And once you recognize who they are, you know they're marked, and that's that. You know who they are. You can even make the decision to ban them, at least until they change their ways. You always have to give them the opportunity to come back if they're willing to change their ways. So we're going to have problematic people, and hopefully we can convince them of the error of their way. Or maybe they'll have the right point, and we are deluded, and we have to be corrected, and maybe we'll find correction. Who knows?
Well, we'll see. I'll get a hold of the state director and talk to him a little more about this, and hopefully he can help us work some of this out.
Right. And the other thing, I just want to put a bug in your ear. To tell you the truth, from what I see and what I hear, 90-something percent of your elected officials, both at the federal and the state level, have all committed treason, and they should be prepared to be, like, gone. And we're going to have to replace them. I'm sorry. And that's the fact. And that's what's getting ready to be happening in the background. Everybody goes, oh, it ain't going to happen. Well, it's not going to happen until it happens.
It's got to happen.
It's going to happen. There's plans in it right now.
Besides
it's going to happen.
That, I don't think God's going to allow us to be, fall.
He's not going
to
hand us off to the devil, John, and that's what that would be doing. He'd be handing us to the devil if he lets them get away with this.
Yeah.
So I have my own faith about that, but, it's the time is now. And the thing is if these guys realize that maybe they got a lot of protest to certain people on the state, as they should, because they're all evil, they're horrible. And I wouldn't want them picking my lunch menu, much less my militia. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
they may all be gone, and it might be up to the people in the state, to get rid of them, to bring those charges up. We were just talking about serving them with this service that says you've broken the law, you've committed treason, and you need to answer this. What Trump has been doing is all these resignations are because they've been sending them the indictments and said, look, you either step down or we're going to arrest you and take you out right now. So
yeah.
I don't know.
I'm part of that. When I say part of it, I mean, I subscribe to the Robert Steele program. But I'm not familiar with what you were talking about, and I'd like to get some clarification on that.
Yeah, see if you can find anything written though in the state constitution, or if any one of them other guys that are protesting, maybe they have something in writing that speaks to that. And look, we can all get educated on it. It's that's what an NLA is about, is educating ourselves. So if you can find that and figure it out for yourself, maybe, and then we don't have to reinvent the world, the wheel, because, look, this is going to go down on all 50 states. It doesn't matter. I mean, we're all in the same boat right now.
I agree. So, I mean, it's got to happen.
We've we got to figure it out. And then this is how it happens with meetings like this. And there's a lot more of these meetings going on in America right now than you realize. We're very fortunate that we still got the internet. We could still talk like this. Because if this was China, yeah, they'd be breaking your door down right now.
Yeah, that's for sure. So, gentlemen, I appreciate your help and your conversation. And like I say, I'm just looking for a path that I can get on to and try to resolve some of these issues. And I certainly want to keep these guys happy. I don't want
to. Well, you know what? Why don't you try to get them to our Monday night meetings and let them ask questions here too? And
yeah, and if you find something out, bring it back to us. Follow up on it. Let's do the Paul Harvey rest of the story thing.
But definitely, have them get a copy of Brent's book on the militia of the several states. It's only a couple of dollars. It's a pocket handbook, and that's where you start, because that's where the conversation will take place from working off that book. Because that's what we use that book to create the necessary paperwork for the militia, you know, to come together and to have how did we put it together? In organizing the militia, we put together the militia rules, okay? And they fall, to some degree, all of us fall together, because we're all part of the Committee of Safety, we fall underneath whatever rules we might create there. Ultimately, we create a charter and resolutions on that level. Yeah. And the specifics of the militia, though, there had to be rules, and we created those rules directly out of the book and the research that Brent had done.
Yeah. Well, like I say, Lee is a pretty knowledgeable guy. He's been around this part of the country forever, and I'm sure he will probably have some help he can give me when I talk to him tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so then bring it back to us next Monday, whatever you find out, you know, so we can...
And we do have other people in the queue.
Resolution,
so
yeah.
On too,
okay,
yeah,
thanks a lot.
Yeah, I'll do that, and I appreciate you guys' help.
Yeah,
right,
okay.
Thanks for
the question. It's a good one.
And by the way, if anybody else wants to get into the queue, *6 and 1, we have 4 people in the queue right now. Gerard? Well, no, actually, I think someone else has hopped in. So
there's more than 4.
Is there?
We might not get to all of them. Let me get
all of them down. Let's see.
Let me get to Ed from Arizona.
6 people.
Oh, I don't know what happened, but I got Eli instead of Ed. It picked from the bottom of the pile. How does that work?
You know, I tell you what, you should always pick from the left side of the name. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hit next and brought up Eli. Go ahead, Eli.
Hey, hello, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, so my question for tonight is, would it make sense to compose a letter to military or the reserves or the National Guard and serve them the plea from the people to make clear to them that there was treasonous acts and sort of ask for their support with regard to replacing, like, individuals, like we could point out individuals that subverted the Constitution and redo various elections to fill those seats.
I think Trump is working on that, so I mean, I don't know that we should spend too much time on that focus. Of course, communicating would be okay with them, and
we should assume that maybe they don't know what they need to. Maybe somebody else is not taking the initiative because it's unclear that anybody is. And so we would want to bypass serving papers to the deep state, understanding that they're corrupt. So how would we bypass them and serve directly to the military? What form of paperwork would you make?
Well, we did a while back in the very beginning when we did the Corwanto. We also gave direction to the generals, the chief of staff, what do they call them? The generals that were actually in the office at the time. And I'm trying to think when this was. I think it was when Trump, it might have been before Trump came into office.
It was.
And we gave orders to the generals that we, the people, through the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, after we have solidified ourselves across the entire United States, so we have a presence in every state. And then we did send them a writ mandamus, and ordering them concerning what they can do, what they can't do, and other things. I forget, there was a lot of stuff we put in there. But that paperwork is up on the website. You can find it.
You know what? That's a great idea, John, because that's an indictment from the people, and give it to the. And then if the military gets that, they can enforce it.
Right. Well, we've got that. We've already done that up on on our website, under grand jury. I think if you click on
action against
the judiciary, you should find all of the paperwork that we filed from the very beginning. And it is there. We did do it.
I read the Paul Waranto and all that, but have you gotten any response from the military or...
Yeah, we haven't got
it.
No,
we didn't give it to the military.
No, we did. We did. We went to the general.
Right. Well, no, we didn't get response from them. I wouldn't have expected it back then anyway.
Yeah, okay. Because is there...
You might get it now that things are closer to craziness now and people are waking up. So that might be something that we want to do again. And the other thing is we have lots of other methodologies of getting their attention. Look at what GR with the 13th Amendment and just telling them that they're out of office because they've disqualified themselves. That was a great discovery, right?
Okay. But so
or actually, was that the 14th Amendment? I'm sorry. There's a line in there about, if they're operating outside of good faith, they have lost their office, and you can replace them immediately. Okay. So we got to figure out how to use that, because that's something that we could do at any time.
Okay. Do you feel that you've provided sufficient evidence to outline that it's unreasonable at this point to expect proper legislation to call forth the militia? To expect a proper response of any kind, have you outlined that sufficiently to the military to say, hey, look, we can't trust these guys, this and this is why, can you help us?
Look, if this comes from the grassroots to deal with this is where the militia should be, but the National Guard is not the militia, as Brent has said. They've tried to form it around, and they bypassed the states pretty much, I think, with the way they formed it, I guess. But ultimately, look at it's up to the military at this point. We do know there's military preparations ready to rock and roll as soon as certain lines have been crossed, and so there are trip lines according to Q. There are trip lines.
Right.
And we've passed through quite a few of them, and we're not even sure on all of them. But when the last one is done, that's when it executes. So that's what we're waiting on there. Now, as far as if it ended up being that wasn't the case, which, there's no way I doubt in any way that is not the case. But let's say it wasn't. Well, then it's up to the people. On the grassroots level, we should be organizing ourselves, connecting with our sheriff, working out posse comitatus, training ourselves, and doing all these things on our county level, on our local level. And we need to do it on a county level, pulling all the states and all of the towns and villages and cities within that county, okay, together. But the committeemen, when you get the committeemen going, they break up into smaller pieces because they break down right into the election districts. And for instance, mm-hmm. in my county, there are 249 election districts. So there are 249 committeemen. And so they break right down into the towns, the villages, the cities, and get involved. So working together, them working together with the Committee of Safety and the militia and the jury administrators who is, working through the court systems, we have it all covered. That's where the powers are, right? We are laying out what the power is. The people need to recognize and take that power. Otherwise, if they don't take it, then it'll just go to someone else in power that has it, and they shouldn't have it, and we'll be... again, ruled by tyrants.
Okay. And again, just one more sort of way to push this question is supposing a general or several army generals put together a group and went in and did something on behalf of the people, and then later on they got in trouble, and they're in court. If we're trying to work beforehand to support them, what papers could we put in place before they end up in trouble and before court so that they could pull up and say, hey, look, I have this paperwork from the people. They asked me this way.
You're not going to get the Army generals to do anything constitutionally either. It's not up to them. Their commander-in-chief is the President of the United States.
That's it. It's got to be Trump.
The people cannot go and say, okay, Army General. Well, we can. We can let them look. If they know there's treason, they're supposed to act on it. And that's what's happening.
Right. And the special forces also have been enacted on Trump,
right,
too.
But you know what? I don't think we need to worry about that, because I think that's all in place right now.
There's no doubt about it. Even if it's not, we can respond from the grassroots level if the people feel and understand that they need to do this. And again, right now we don't need to do this. And there is so much work to be done. We got to focus on the work that we got to do. And we'll take on more if we have to. But if someone else is already working on that job, why should we do it? You know, we got the Republic Review going. We've got people working on it. Why should we reinvent the wheel? Let's work with those people. You know, we got many things going on. There are other groups and other things that people are doing things. We got Trump working on it. And he says the best is yet to come. And if you really listen to his speech, a lot of people, I think, missed it. I'm trying to think exactly what his words were. And he talked about, who knows, I won't have to go back and listen to it. But he talked about maybe I'll run for I'll win a third time, okay?
Right.
But then he referred back to something that ultimately fell upon himself. He's still in charge. He's still doing things. I'm going to have to go re-listen to that speech again and pull that point out and make that point, because it was very, very, it was very subtle on the one hand, but when you think about it, he was giving us a little inside message.
And he was also needling them, because what he said is, I will win for a third term, because he's considering this his term.
And he's creating a conflict, too.
In other words, he didn't lose, he won.
Right.
And so he's counting this as a term.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
That's the point. But he said a few words. I got to go back and re-listen to see what exactly he said, because it struck me when he said it.
Right.
And I realized he was talking about himself, that he was going to fix this problem. But it was very subtle. I'll try to bring it up next Monday.
Yeah.
You know? Okay. And then, like as it is right now, it's not the governor's sole office to be the one who interprets the Constitution, like with all these mask mandates and all that. So
that's a cut and dry one. The governor cannot order the people to do anything. He can order agencies. People believe it.
It's because we're stupid. Look at you. Should be taking those masks off. We need massive civil disobedience. That mask is never going to end until the people refuse to wear it.
Right. But that's just a point that leads to my question here. That's not actually my question. Okay. The governor's acting like this. He's taking the authority to interpret the Constitution on behalf of all the people, and we're letting him do it. Okay. Now, who's the rightful person to determine when subversion takes place? Okay. The elections are rigged.
Ultimately, the people. Look at ultimately the people, and that's what Trump is trying to do, is get the people to see it. But hold on. Let me tell you what the problem is. The problem gets back to an education, knowledge. If people understood that civil law has nothing to do with them, that there can be no legislative law that they can be held under, that government cannot control their behavior by law, and you can't control sin by making a law either. You know, when the people understand that, then they're on the road to real liberty. Until they understand that they're only under the law of nature and nature's God. Okay.
Look, and
nothing
they
else.
Know it. They know it, John, because in New York, the way the law is written, it's not a law, first of all. It's not a law. It's an edict, and it's a recommendation, and in there he put, and a mask must be worn if it can be tolerated. And he didn't say medically tolerated, he said tolerated, which means you can't tolerate it because you have a philosophical. He wrote it constitutionally, you understand? He didn't break the Constitution. We're the jackasses that are breaking the Constitution, and the cops that are enforcing it, they're all committing treason. But he saved himself because he put in there, if one could be tolerated. He didn't tell them to go out and bust your head when you said that you're not going to. I mean, look at Joe Barton. He gave them the law. He said
the word tolerated did say medically. I'm looking at it right now. Medically.
Well,
tolerated.
No, but it didn't say medical. It said medical.
Who was over the age of two and able to medically tolerate a mask. That's what he wrote.
Well, if you can't medically tolerate it, they can't even question you under HIPAA. They're not even supposed to ask you any questions. If you say, I have a medical condition, I can't tolerate it. It could be a mental condition. I go crazy. I start biting people's noses off.
Well, look, at the bottom line, is they can't make you wear a mask anyway.
You know? Oh, that's right.
That's the bottom line. That no one can make a law requiring you to do anything. And yet, look at all the laws requiring us to do all kinds of things and getting all kinds of permits and permission. You know, I mean, that's because the people don't know. They're ignorant. You know, look, this is the hardest thing for people to get over also, because they really think that they have to have laws in order to control things around them so that, you know, they don't get injured or something and that there'd be a harmony amongst the people. No, that happens naturally, okay? We don't have to worry about that. And if we were exercising the law of God and proper courts of justice, and people understood what the law is versus equity, you know, versus legislative law, man-made law versus the law of God, if they understood the difference between that and what applies to them, we wouldn't have any of these problems. This paper, everybody would know this paper is BS and doesn't mean anything.
And not only that, it's harmful. Wearing a mask is harmful. So it's the science is the exact opposite of what they're telling you.
Right, so tolerate it from that position.
And wearing two masks is more harmful. I never heard anything so ridiculous in all my life. You're getting the hypoxia with one, we'll put two on. And then and we'll put a petri dish on your face so you can cough into it and those things can grow and you can reinfect yourself and everybody else with them.
You know what the saddest thing about this whole thing is that the medical people, because right now the hospitals, I've been in and out of hospitals a lot in the past month, and right now I've seen all of a sudden they're all wearing double masks now. You go into these medical offices and stuff in the hospitals, they're wearing double masks. Now, what's really sad about this whole thing is that they know. They know that you can't stop a virus with a mask.
They don't know. They cheated on their medical boards and stuff. Come on. They don't know, obviously. If they would read the science, they would know. They're listening to those that they worship, and they're not looking into it themselves. Yeah, read the side of the box. What's the box say? Will not stop a virus.
Okay, I never knew there was a box. So
no, there's a warning on the box that doesn't prevent viruses, and the whole 6 foot thing. You know what?
No, I never. You mean as a when you buy a. I never noticed that.
If you buy a box of masks, it tells you right on the box that they're not medically approved that they're not effective against viruses.
No kidding. I got to look at that.
I'm not kidding you. That's how stupid everybody is. It's the emperor has no clothes. And the other thing is this 6 foot distancing. Look at COVID, we know, travels on an aerosol, not a droplet, an aerosol. Well, you know how far aerosols go? 30 feet. So we got to have 30 feet social distancing, okay? Which means you can't.
I think it's time to move on to the next call.
Okay, I got on a roll. I'm sorry.
Look at it. There's nothing out there anymore, anyway, in my opinion. So, but let's go on to the next caller.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, Eli.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ed from Arizona.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. Have you heard that Maricopa County judge decides in Arizona Senate's favor, i.e., we can now look at the ballots and the machines?
I heard that. I did hear that.
And today they were supposed to assign the people that were going to do that. I haven't heard what the result of that is yet.
Well, they better get busy.
One of the things that Trump may be waiting on also is the idea of having the states repair the problem and change the numbers because there was fraud. That'd be an interesting thing to see.
Thank you. The second thing, Chief Administrative Officer, that is a title that Trump gave Biden, not President.
Chief Administrative Officer.
What was he gave Chief Biden?
in his speech, he called Trump, he called Biden the chief administrative officer.
Oh, okay. that brings him under friction, maybe. I don't know.
The third thing I have on my list here. In the elections, Trump won in 2016. Second election that he won was in 2020. The third election that he will win is when the army throws Biden out and there is a new voting done by the entire country.
Well, I think only the states only have to do that, but I think the whole country should be evaluated because, well, first of all, we need to get rid of the machines. They got to go. Hand counting is the only way to go about it. You can have a machine tally it, okay, but still, just open the machine up and count them, tally it by hand, and then you can confirm it by the machine. Now you've got a really good system.
That's my interpretation of what three elections Trump will win.
That's interesting. Yeah, I'm going to go back and listen to that part. So.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Okay. Franklin from North Carolina, you've been unmuted.
Hey. Hey, John. Yes. Hey, look. Let me just run past something past you for a minute. You know, we need the masses to get involved, but we don't need them every day. Don't necessarily need them on every call. But if they're ready to act when we need them to act, then, you know, hey, we got a little program going here. So, you know, in my opinion, we need to start at the county level, get our counties in order, and then move to the state levels and do the same there. And once that's done, it'd be much easier to apply that same technique to what we need to get done at the U.S. federal level. Let me just throw something out there, and you can say yay, nay, or agree, disagree. But if you look at what's going on over there in California with Gavin Newsom, that recall effort over there is well on its way, and it looks like it could or would be successful. Now, I don't know what you guys think, but I think right now, if he were given a chance to have a list of items that made sense, that he could choose to lighten up on and work with the people on some of those issues that they determined were must-haves. You know, it seems to me like he would think, well, maybe that's not such a bad idea because he's going to get booted out and he knows it. So I don't know what you think about that, but if you take that thought and multiply it, you know, the problem is we don't, you know, we elect rascals and put them in there and then freaking we have to live with them for 4 years. And the first freaking 2 or 3 weeks that they're in office, you know, they're already not doing what we hired them and what they promised to do. So we got to have some kind of control over them.
This is what we're trying to get people to do, is to take that control. We are offering them the way, the knowledge, the education to have that control. But it's up to the people to step up and do it. Now, I communicated over the weekend with some of the leadership of that group out there in California. I was very surprised to find out that they're very well organized already in every county. They got all the counties already organized. So I offered to them our book on that we put together on how to organize committees of safety, and I explained to them about the committees of safety and the other. You know, it's not just what they're doing that needs to be done. They have other work to do. They have to rebuild their militia also. They got to pull together the people within their own counties and in their own communities and start educating them. They need to take control of the courts through the administrations that we're setting up. They need to take the political process through the committeemen. All of these things, and participate with the Republic Review, all of these things need to be done. Now, I hope that they have gone out and looked at our book and looked at our website and start to use our tools and develop themselves up like the rest of the nation is trying to do, of course. We're trying to get this going in every state. Now, I know for me, myself, in New York, I believe I'm going to head out probably in the spring or definitely by summertime. I'm going to tour the state again. Gerard and I have toured the state on numerous occasions. We've been all the way down south, all the way to Long Island, and all the way out north and west, all the way up into the Niagara County, Erie County. I mean, we went throughout all of New York here. organizing when we were doing the committee members. We need to do the same thing now to really get them up and going on committees of safety. And we need people in their states, not only to do what has to be done in the counties, but someone to take the initiative in their state to take a leadership role to get out onto the road and start bringing the message to liberty groups in every county within their state. This is what we need to be doing.
Yeah, I agree. But I think you'd agree, too, that before 2022 gets here, we're going to have our election process in the bag, and we can't have it like it is
now. The only
now.
Way that's going to be clean, there's only one way that's going to be clean. First of all, you've got to put all the criminals in jail. But it's going to still be a problem until the committeemen get involved. The people become committeemen. Then they take their oaths, and they count. They witness the counting of the votes and certify it. This is part of the process of the committeemen.
Right, exactly. We got to have that, too.
They can have their machines there, and you can get a nice count, and they can be reported, but they have to be certified. You know, then there's a time period. You know, there's many months that go by before the final certifications are done. So, I mean, you can give them the numbers. These are the all-in numbers for the machines, but by the end of the day or the next day, they can tally a hand count because, look at every election district has a representative in the committee, okay, in the committeeman process. And so right there alone, like, for instance, where I go, there's probably, let me think, I'll take a guess, there's probably about 12 or probably about 10 or 12 different election districts within my area where I go to vote. And we have two election districts within our, you know, election places or polling places in our town. So, I mean, ultimately, the counting of the vote does not take that long when you have the people on the grassroots working it on the election level,
exactly.
The election
That's
district
the key,
levels.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I would agree with you. And as far as I'm concerned, the first thing we need to do is go back to paper ballots. You've got to have a paper ballot. Do it any way you want to do it, and it's got to be counted by hand. You can add the machines in there to double-check to work. But as far as I'm concerned,
well,
you've got to have...
Well, yeah, the machines can give the initial numbers to go in quickly, you know, for the count.
Right.
But then they have to be confirmed by hand. And look, at it's up to the committeemen to really keep an eye on this right up into the state level for the total, the state tally level, right?
Also, right, but we got to get the legislature to change the law, so that is the law. How do you get them to do
look at that this is the law of natural law, period, whether it's written on the books or not. There are lots of states that have not provided for the committeeman. Okay, there are states that have provided in a wrong way for the committeeman. But that doesn't mean we've got to follow what the legislator said in that state. No, we step up to what is logical, what is obvious, what is true, what is just, what has been done in the past, what common law will support. That's how we do it. We do it through maxims, things that are just, you can't deny, this is the right way to do it. And that's very simple. We've lost our common sense, at least that in the narrative, the narrative that floats all around us that we hear, common sense has been lost out there. We have to bring it back. We have to resurrect it.
Let me ask you something. Gavin Newsom, in the situation he's in right now, they have more votes than what they need to recall him. Do you think if he had an opportunity to make some concessions right now, he would?
If he made some what? Confessions?
Concessions, yeah.
Oh, concessions.
Yeah. If the
truth that we say the question again.
I wouldn't trust him.
Yeah, I hear that.
In other words, I wouldn't trust him.
Oh, yeah, I'll be good. Forget about it.
I'm not sure I understood the question.
No, he says if Gavin Newsom was given the opportunity to make concessions, do you think he would? And I'm saying, who cares if he would or not? I wouldn't trust him as far as I can throw him.
Yeah, he's already failed.
Right, but you have to hold her feet to the fire. So anyway, here was my idea: if we started recall efforts at the county level, just like they're doing in California, and we did that across the nation, every state did their part, and we got every one of them with the numbers to where, you know what, if you screw up, we're going to snatch your freaking tail out of office. Then we might
be able to. The committeemen have that power already. If you become an elected committeeman and you fill these seats with people who are educated in the Constitution, which is what we're trying to do, and it's controlled on a county level, working with the committees of safety, they already have the power and the authority to remove anyone from office. They have the power to prevent anyone from getting onto the ticket. They have the power to put anyone they want onto the ticket. The problem is the people don't control that. That's the committee man. And we have to resurrect the elected committee man.
Yeah.
That will do exactly what you're saying. That's one of the things we're trying to do. You know, look, right. when a county chairman, okay, talks to anyone within that electric the election subdivision that he's talking to the individual from, okay, but that county is connected to a particular election district for, you know, all of the different positions that would affect those election districts. But when a county right. chair talks to an individual who they put in office because they put him on the ballot to be elected by the people. People put him in office, but the committee man put him on the ballot, you see? Now, if that committee man put him on the ballot and the county chair calls that individual up, whatever, you know, position that they were elected to, and tells them that they're doing something wrong and they got to stop it and they got to change their ways and they got to do this or that, that person who they got onto the ballot is going to obey that county chairman. And the county chairman answers to the whole committee of the county.
What strength do you have, though, to jerk them out of office right then?
They recall. A committeeman can recall like that. Do you know the call can go out to the committeeman, and within a week they can pull all the necessary numbers they need, all the necessary signatures within a week, and certify them within 1 week. They can do the entire state to get rid of a governor in 1 week, okay,
that's
because there's so many of them.
Right. If we get the framework in place, and you know, I'm a busy guy, and so I think about how can you save time? How can you get people like me that would go in there and sit down? Well, I'm going to tell you something. If they had a website that I could go to and I could sit down and click and fill it out online or file print it and fill it out, sign my name to it, stick all of them in one envelope, put two stamps on it, and mail it down. Or if we had a county-wide effort, we just all had a big get-together. And, you know,
we're reinventing the wheel here. There's no reason to even get involved in that. Let's become committeemen, right. Take 100% control, and it's done. It's done. The people have a beef. If the people have a beef and the committee men aren't picking up on it, guess what? They're going to hear it at the Committee of Safety meeting because the committee men are going to be there too. And they're going to hear what's going on, and they're going to look into it. They'll deal with it, and they'll fix the problem. You see, the committee men control. Let me say this. I haven't said this in a while, but the committee men control 100% of the political process and the control of all the people that are elected. Okay, the juries control 100% of what goes in on a courts of record and courts of law. 100%. The judge gets no say in this, and they shouldn't even have any say. They don't have any say in the penalty. That's up to the jury. Everything is up to the jury, up to the people. So when the people can understand that this is their job, this is their power, this is their authority, this is their duty, this is what it takes to have government by consent, if they're not willing to do it, if they're going to be too lazy and not willing to do it, to go to that one meeting once a month because it's your duty to do it, okay, then they don't deserve liberty. They don't deserve a government by consent. They don't deserve anything. They don't deserve the law. They deserve civil law. That's what they deserve, be told what to do and be a slave. So, but the whole thing is there. What you're talking about already exists. We just have to put the people in those positions. People have to – and every single person – let me just finish with this. Every single person, from the point when you're born and before you die, you should become a committee man at least once. Put a two-year system. It's a two-year thing. And look, it's only about 40 hours a year. That's it. It's not a lot. It's in the evenings, okay, with the exception of the one state meeting they have, which usually is done on a weekend. But in any event, it's not a lot of time. But it's a very rewarding job. You get to interview the people who want to get into office, and you get to decide whether you want to put them on the ticket or not. You get to decide whether you're going to walk his papers and get the signatures and get them onto the ticket. And then the people will decide who they want from those tickets that you put these people forward to. So, you know, everything is already there. This whole process, we wouldn't have any problems. We wouldn't have any problems with counting votes if the people became elected committeemen across the nation. Wouldn't have any problem with people breaking the Constitution and ignoring it and denying it. We wouldn't have problems with judges because we would force the legislators to impeach them. Okay? We'd get rid of the judges. Or, well, the people will just indict the judges and we'll pull them out of office that way. There's two ways to do it. It doesn't necessarily have to be political. It could be judicial. And this is what we're trying to teach the people. Let's exercise what our founding fathers has given us. This is we're not making this stuff up. This is all in history. This is our heritage. You know, let's do what our founding fathers did. Let's become committees of safety. Work from there.
So people can let's select an area and do it so people can see it can be done, and then all we have to do is replicate it.
Well, that's what we're working on right now. Absolutely. Well, we've already got. Look at. We've got a detailed paper laying out exactly how to form a committee of safety. We've written everything up for them. All they have to do is follow the program. And in certain areas, you get to the point, they got to be creative and do and add to the resolutions concerning the problems where they live within their counties and so on. So it's already there. All that is there. All we have to do is get the people to take those booklets and start exercising it. Now, we're working on a booklet right now. We're working on a detailed booklet on for the committeemen, okay, which I think we've already done the committeemen. We're working on also booklets not only for the committeemen, but for all the other different positions. We write in handbooks for the administrators of the grand jury, for instance, or the trial juries. The administrators need a handbook, and we're working on that. And those books are going to be about, I don't know, maybe 40, 50, 60 pages, but it's details. It gives all the information. It's sort of like a book of regulations and rules to a certain degree. But it's the basic ideas to follow and how it's been set up for us, how the system works, and how our founding fathers have already set all this stuff in play. It's just that we've forgotten it. And they purposely didn't teach it to us.
Right.
And again, we got to get involved with our schools and make sure we get proper educations. Because we don't have a proper education in our school. Our children are being brought up as morons, really.
Yeah. Well, I've been listening to you guys calling in off and on, and like I said, I'm busy, so I don't get to, you know, sit in on every call, and I decided that I'd catch a call tonight. It's been a little while since I've been on. And, you know, just looking for something that works. And to me, If we had everybody in the state of North Carolina from the county on up to the governor and had all the votes ready to recall them, and you just call them up and say, you're not doing that. If you do, we're going to freaking start the recall. Got all the signatures all ready tomorrow. Seemed like they would respond to that. Whatever it takes to get them to respond, we got to get the voting fixed, however it happens. You know, I just know that.
Well, we have to fix it right so it never happens again. We got to resurrect the elected committeemen. They fix those problems. All that is already set up. Let's give it to the people who are the committeemen. Let's get people in to become committeemen to do it, to take care of this. You know, again, my one county has 249 committeemen. 249 people involved in dealing with the problems within the county. Now, of course, they break them down into towns. There are lots of different subdivisions, political subdivisions. Yep. So they cross into each other, but ultimately their power is in the county level. That's where the structure and the county, you know, the power comes really ultimately from. But it funnels right down to the town, the village, the city, whatever.
So each of those individuals would need to know that material you're referring to.
Absolutely. They need to read the book on the handbook for committeemen. And that's the one I'm working on right now, is the handbook for the committeemen, which is going to give great detail exactly how it works, everything, the structure, the meetings. They come together once every 2 years or once a year on a state level. Usually once every 2 years, because you don't need to come together anymore on a state level. And the county chairmen come together on a state level from time to time, generally around the time when the state elections are taking place. But they come together when they come into power, and it's a two-year period that they come into power for. When they come into power, they come together in one place. It's in the Capitol. and they meet in the Capitol, and they break up, and they work together into their own county divisions up there, and they do all their elections of all the people that they want to put as chairman, and so on and so forth. And each county really, each county chair represents that county up at the state level. So, for instance, my state has 62 counties, so we have 62 state chairmen. They're the county chairman. Okay. Now they play games with this, and they appoint these people from other positions in other ways. They're not even part of the committeeman process, and a lot of times they'll choose people, like here in New York, they'll pull the people out of the Board of Elections that are working there, and they've got total control over there. They're already being paid at the Board of Elections working this whole process, and then those people working at that Board of Election, they become the state committeemen. And that's not the way it's supposed to be. It's not a specially elected position. Each county sends their representative to the state leadership. And so we're going to lay all this stuff out, exactly how it works now, because we've researched and studied this. This is where we started with the committeemen. We've got lots of papers we've written, lots of notes and different things, and we're going to pull it all together into a handbook.
Yeah. That sounds good. Yeah, well, if they play by the rules, then we can play by the rules, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
But I tell you what, whenever they start getting close on that recall, Gavin Newsom, all of a sudden he changes too.
Uh-huh.
Just say it, you know what I mean?
Well, he's got to go out anyway. It's too late for him.
Right.
You know, he can't be trusted.
He'd be pretty valuable if they had him sitting there waiting to freaking run him out of there. If they left him in, he might change his tune and be better than running another in there. Who knows?
Absolutely. Right. Well, look, I'm looking at the clock here, and we're almost at the end. There's a few people. We could try to get them in, you know,
appreciate
a couple
it.
Minutes apiece. So.
Y'all have a good one. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Gerard? Gerard, you here?
Yeah. Having trouble unmuting. I don't know. You want to do one more and go?
Yeah, well, if we can do them quick, we'll give everybody a little chance. I don't know, but you know, it's.
Let's see what. What is that, Stacy? I don't have my glasses off. From CA.
Hi, this is Sydney.
Hi, this is Sydney. Ted from California. Yeah, this is Ted from California. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes,
go right ahead, Ted.
Okay, so I've called in. I haven't called in for a couple of years. My situation is I was arrested February 11 of 2015. I was arrested and charged by information recording a false document, a quit claim deed. I've been battling and fighting them ever since. And my main concern is I'm reading things that say that constitutionally, after 5 years, if they haven't taken you to trial, it's over. And
it's not even 5 years. It's sooner than that, but go ahead. Speedy trial is like way before that.
No, I've spent 6 years now. As far as I'm concerned, I've self-taught myself a law degree. I know more about criminal procedure and practice than the lawyers that work in it. And I've been kicking their butts. I've exposed that the county pays the state judges. These state court judges that preside in this county are fully compensated by the state of California, and the county is paying, on average, an additional $60,000 to each of these judges. Now, this was brought up by Dr. Fine in Los Angeles. I've now used that here. But my main thing is, this last year, they forced a public defender on me. So I turned around and sued the public defender, the deputy public defender, and the public defender. I have a civil lawsuit going against them. So I haven't been in to the court on this matter since January of a year ago. And my next hearing is this coming Monday. And I listened on the phone, and they pushed everybody's cases out again today. So they have this Monday calendar that's trial calendar, and they pushed everybody's cases. And I expect that they may push mine again. But the fact is, guys, they set me for trial last April 6th, and then every month, without sending any notice, without a hearing, they just pushed it to the next month's date. So they set 12 trial dates and failed to have a trial. And there's been multiple times that they've violated my speedy trial rights over the years. But now we're coming past, this isn't about the 60 days. This isn't about how many days before, after arraignment that they have to do a preliminary hearing. I'm talking about the straight hard wall in the Constitution, both the state Constitution and the federal Constitution, that says 5 years, it's over. In a civil case here in California, if you're in a civil case and you haven't brought the case to trial within 5 years, it gets dismissed on a motion. And so that's the situation I'm in, and I'm looking for the answer for this, because I'm now past 6 years. And again, this was my house, and the allegation is recording a quitclaim deed.
Let me ask if Brent is out there, because he might be able to respond to this better than we can. We did have someone who worked with the quick claim deed.
Yeah. You know who knows about that too is Robert Overule, is big on that stuff.
Yeah, but maybe Brent's still here. Maybe he has some knowledge on it.
I'm here. I just wondered more about the details, but a quitclaim deed, a simple thing. It just says whatever rights that I might happen to have in the property I'm talking about is yours. It could be no rights at all, whatever rights I got, or it could be very few rights, or it could be all fee simple rights. It doesn't define things. It isn't a warranty deed. It doesn't guarantee anything. It just says whatever rights I have, I'm transferring to you. That's a quitclaim deed. Q-U-I-T.
And it's without warranty. I have the legal definition. I've been studying this for 6 years. I've never been in trouble with the law. So when I was arrested and drug out of the house, these animals came with machine guns, armored vehicles, 30 people. Okay? And they actually put in writing. See, I don't want to. I'm kind of starting to skip all around now, because I've got you guys, and I'm trying to tell you, look, this is the most malicious prosecution, and I'm being targeted. But those dummies at the district attorney's office put in writing that if I would agree not to civilly sue the guy that bought my house at foreclosure sale, and that if I would drop the lawsuit for my house and agree not to pursue it civilly, that they wouldn't put me in prison. They put that in writing.
Really?
This is proof.
That's called extortion.
It's extortion, but it's also the district attorney is abusing.
It means they know they're wrong.
No, well, and so what? They cost me a heart attack. They're trying to kill me. Okay. And let me tell you this, guys. You will not believe this. I know you hear a lot of stuff, but 14 months into this thing, back in, now remember, this started February of 2015. And about 14 months in, I succumbed to the first heart attack. 4 weeks after the heart attack, emergency surgery, there was a hearing. I sent a cardiologist letter that said I was subject to sudden death and couldn't come to court. The judge said, if he doesn't come down, we're going to issue a bench warrant. So they called me, said, get in here. I went on in there. She takes the bench, calls the case. She suspends the hearing for a bit, brief. She goes off the bench to her office. I start having a second heart attack. The deputy calls paramedics, goes and tells the judge. Judge comes in, gets back on the bench. I'm in the throes of a heart attack. She continues to prosecute me until she's told that the paramedics are in the elevator. They come in the room, My blood pressure is 200 over 136. And don't forget, I just had heart surgery 4 weeks earlier. That didn't kill me. So they've now continued. We've had over 120 hearings over the past 6 years over this one piece of paper.
Well, tell me what they're after you. That's obvious. Well, what is it? What'd you do to kick them off?
In other words, they foreclosed his house.
Yeah.
And he went and filed a quick claim deed on it.
Oh, I see.
That's the problem. Yeah. And now they're telling him if he drops the charges against the guy that bought his house, they'll drop the charges against him. It sounds like there's something wrong with the sale to me. I don't know.
Yeah, and they're afraid to go to trial. That's clear. And this is a common tactic, and keep shoving it out, shoving it out, shoving it out. The only thing you can do, one of the things you could do is to file a writ mandamus or writ of prohibition, which do the same thing, but file a writ of prohibition with the appellate court and tell them.
Okay, but here's the politics. Socrates Peter Manoukian was the judge in the civil court that got in this. Now, let me back up. A foreclosure sale took place. The bidder got his trustee's deed upon sale 8 days later, filed it, recorded it with the county. These people I was working with, now I see what they did. About a month later, they went and recorded a substitution of trustee and a rescission of sale, two documents. That put the property back in my name. Subsequent to that is the alleged recording of a quitclaim deed. That quitclaim deed is from my name to my trust. I was living in the house the whole time. I was still in the house 9 months after the recording, alleged recording of the quitclaim deed. Okay.
How many? Who's the trustee and who are the beneficiaries?
Well, trustee corpse formed the illegal foreclosure.
You know, you said you transferred to from your name to an entrusted name. Who's the person you transferred it to?
My trust.
I know, but who's the trustee of your trust, your so-called trust?
I am.
Oh, okay. So you transferred it from yourself. You didn't transfer it. You just declared yourself trustee, whereas before you weren't trustee of whatever rights you happen to have, and you don't know what you really got, I take it, right?
Yes. Look, when you get down, there is no criminal or evil intent here. The document itself shows you that. It shows that the belief that you own something.
I get it. No, they're just flat after you. That's all. And that's why I say a writ of prohibition. I have seen him work. I have seen him work in the state courts. I don't know what happened in California, but somebody up the line there is going to look down and say, this has got to stop. And if you take it up to the appellate court, then if that doesn't work, then take it on up to the California Supreme Court.
Okay, I might get somewhere at the California Supreme Court. Also, what I did, I found out now that they never had a valid Fourth Amendment arrest warrant. So about 2 years ago, when I did a habeas, and in a knee-jerk response, they brought what they called an arrest warrant to court that day. It's a single piece of paper, no affidavit, nothing, single piece of paper. And so I took that to federal court, filed for a writ of review against the prosecuting DA to produce a valid Fourth Amendment arrest warrant. The judge over there, Lucy Coe, in the federal court, she issued a 9-page order. Basically, she's saying she doesn't have jurisdiction right now, but she spent 9 pages going through everything that she saw a problem with. And then at the very, she's basically saying she will not interfere with the criminal court, but and that she doesn't have jurisdiction right now. And then she put dismissed, and then in all capital letters, without prejudice. And I finally sat down and read that whole thing, and I'm going to file it in as mandatory judicially noticed evidence into the case, but they're done. Guys, I'll tell you right now, you got to get me hooked up with some civil rights lawyers to sue the hell out of them so I can help fund you guys. Okay? Because you're right. I have a history with this county. I helped an elderly gentleman. They stole his Boeing PT-17 Stearman.
What county is it? What county?
Santa Clara County.
Oh.
And you know how evil they are. We just had to go to the churches just went to the United States Supreme Court and got an order to open the churches back up. This county supervisors, they wouldn't even, the California Supreme Court has been making opinions left and right against Newsom. And you're right. No, we cannot trust Gavin Newsom, for God's sake. No, there's no negotiating with a freaking criminal. This guy, come on, he's Nancy Pelosi's, is his aunt. Look, all the problems in San Francisco, are the seed that came out of San Francisco. Nancy Pelosi, Gavin Newsom, this Kamala Harris, this Becerra.
Did they send all the hookers out? Did all the hookers come with them? San Francisco used to be full of hookers. I don't.
You don't give a politician another chance when they show you stuff like this. I can't. So I just really was like, when that was proposed a little bit ago, I'm like, are you kidding me? And he's crying. Newsom is crying that it's too easy to recall somebody. His remark when the reporter asked him to make a comment about the recall, he said, well, it only takes 1.5 million people to do a recall. And, 6 million people in California voted for Trump. That was his response to it. And by the way, guys, it has been no easy task. This is the third attempt at this recall. Okay? And they finally got their act together. So we got look, there's big, big problems everywhere. You guys know that. But this, it's horrible out here. The streets are not safe during the day. The whole Silicon Valley has turned into a third world country. There's people everywhere on the streets and tents everywhere. And yet these people continue their agenda as if, look, if their policies and practices and beliefs were the way, why isn't California a utopia? Okay. And guys, I've lived here my whole life. What the heck happened? How come the Kool-Aid didn't get me? Because I'll tell you right now, there are millions and millions of Californians that are under siege. Hardworking people get up early, go to work, pay their taxes. Look, even these high-tech corporations, these mega corporations, business-wise, they're Republicans. Okay? And then I also believe in that, look, we're not Democrats, we're not Republicans, we're Americans. And what you guys are doing is exactly what has to happen. What's happened, I'm really seeing over history, what's happened is the people have been lulled along, tricked into a little bit of security, false security, to give up their freedoms. And it's come to the point now where, we're off a cliff here in California. They've enacted a law that they can't take people out of the rental properties here that aren't paying their rent. And they keep kicking it down. Now there's a moratorium till the end of June. When that moratorium is lifted, the streets are going to flood with homeless people. Okay, it's over here in California, guys. It's common sense, which a lot of people don't have out here. And where I come from on this, We're only as strong as our weakest link, and our people, everybody has to be at a minimum level of existence, and that doesn't mean government assisted existence. Everybody has to work. Everybody has to contribute. And when you do, you feel better about yourself anyway. So it's a horrible, horrible situation that the radical Democrats have brought upon this great state. And it's taken so long to take it down because of its massive wealth. But it's sinking. Make no mistake about it. It's chaos out here. The attitude in the streets is lawlessness, and that's why these attacks are going on. It has nothing to do with race, and the criminals are getting desperate. So, because you know, people have been staying home, and so no, this governor has to go. He has known for over a year and a half now of the massive fraud in the unemployment insurance. I don't know if you guys are up on that, but massive fraud of millions and millions of dollars. And first off, the EDD, which is the unemployment insurance, they could only pay benefits for 2 months before they went bankrupt and turned around and get loan guarantees from the federal government for $900 billion. What they were collecting money for almost 10 years in a constant uptick of prosperity here. So why could they only pay for 2 months? You know, you know what's going on. It's illegal immigration, and the people who are the people are the last care to these politicians. My God, it really amazes me that and what they're doing to the children right now. But they've been out of school for more than a year. We can't get the teachers unions and the administrators and the school boards to put these kids back in the school. They want to stay home and collect their paycheck. And this is child abuse, guys. It's severe child abuse. And you're talking about these young minds. They're all behind a year now. But you know, this masking stuff, everything they're doing to the children, it's child abuse. So I that's the flavor of California, and I wanted to get that out there because I want you to know not everybody out here is a left-wing radical.
No, I think there's more right-wing people now. It's just a media perception. It's a lie. I think people have switched.
It actually has been all along. Look, I ran for city council and county supervisor, and even at those levels, the jerking around and with the elections. One time when I was running for city council, they put a woman on the ballot. She was on a school board. She had no intention on taking the position. She did it just to skew the vote. The moment her name, they started printing the ballot, she suspended her campaign. There's all kinds of ways to rig an election.
Yeah, and I've seen it myself.
And so, trust, they're not going to let a guy like me get in that position. My background, I worked at IBM. I was an engineer. I'm a pilot. I have a pilot's license, multi-engine instrument ratings. I'm not a commercial, I don't fly airlines, but I was a machinist and a tool maker. I was then an engineer at IBM, and then I went into real estate after IBM, because in high tech out here, when you were 40 years old, you're done. you can't get a job. And so I switched over to real estate 15 years ago. So that's, but yeah, my history with the county is I helped this elderly man, 85 years old. They stole his airplane. I got his airplane back for through the process. And then after that, you know, they came after me. They came after me for a long, long time. And then it kind of settled down because of this, it all ended. And then this thing popped up now. And, you know, I'm active in local politics. I don't have children, but I coached Little League for a while because I was a Little Leaguer. So I was giving back. And I formed a neighborhood association, you know, and got things up, you know, like we needed some stop signs in the neighborhood. Got that done. Little things, you know, the stuff that makes your neighborhood better, safer. And then that's why I ended up going for city council and stuff, because when I saw the mess, you know, that was going on, and just to irritate them a little bit too, honestly, the first time.
Well, it's too bad after 5 years you couldn't have got all those people out of office that were chasing you. That's a long time for any term. I mean, they're 2 year terms and 4 year terms, right?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this. There's a aura around me, and early on in this case, the deputy prosecutor, he was screaming in court that I'm a terrorist, and I got told the other day that he's had cancer now for a year, and that he got thrown off the case about 3 years ago, and then the next guy that came on, within 6 months, he got a case of pneumonia and almost didn't make it. So God's watching over me. God's put me in this position for whatever reason. I'm really, today's been a bad day because I listened via the phone to the court cases to try to anticipate what it's going to be like for me when I go in there next Monday. It looks like they're pushing all the cases out another 2 months, but again, over the last year, they kept setting trial. It's trial, okay? They kept setting a trial date, and by the way, guys, they've erased all of that from the record, so it doesn't.
Which is illegal. Listen. They're pushing these things off because of what? Because of COVID.
This past year, yes, I believe it's COVID, but prior to that, no.
Look, there is no COVID, and that's going to come out. They're going to be in trouble. That whole thing is a fraud, and everybody that participated in it is liable, you know. And I predict that that's what's going to happen with these guys. They know what they're doing. They're using this to their advantage, and they're playing games. And you can't push these things off of because of this COVID baloney, which has never been proven. There is no COVID. There's no more people dead this year than there was last year. So that's all going to come out here in the next couple months. So bide your time, believe me, because it's all going to go away. Their whole administrative court, which is unconstitutional, is going to go away too. So, I don't know exactly how that's going to happen, but I know that if we're going back to the rule of law, to the Constitution, those things won't exist anymore. They'll have to dismantle them. And they'll have to pay you for your time and your loss, basically.
There's not enough money to bring my heart
back. I understand that, but, you know, a couple million token, you know, that'd be nice. But... I guess you could personally sue each actor if you really wanted to be vindictive and go after them. And I don't really mean vindictive in that particular way. You know what I mean? I mean, they deserve it. There's no doubt about it.
Look, I can prove RICO here with these clowns.
Look, if you steal enough money from somebody and it gets big enough and you hurt them bad enough, you can get life imprisonment. You know, you could ruin somebody's life. I'd even dare say you might be able to get the death penalty out of it if you wreck somebody's life through theft. and coercion and dragging them through the court, and you had two heart attacks. Come on. Anyway, we got to go. It's very late. I don't want this recording to run much longer than this, but that's interesting. Keep us up to date, you know?
Okay.
Be interesting to see what happens.
All right. Thank you
okay.
very much.
Have a good night. Thank you, everybody. Sorry we didn't get to everybody, but we got close. Okay. And we'll see you next week, same time.